Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Holy cow, I'm one of the top 50 internet broadcasters in the country. Who'd have thunk it? Not me. I don't, you know, I had no idea. I was sitting here quietly minding my business the other night when an email came rolling in from Jack in Shreveport saying, "Hey, Bob, did you know this?" And lo and behold, Talkers Magazine, which is like the industry magazine for talk radio, Talkers Magazine has named me one of the future 50. The 50 most influential bestestest of all time. I don't know. One of the 50 best internet broadcasters in the country. Not one of the 50 best liberals. There ain't that many of us. One of the 50 best, you know, wing nuts included, and, you know, how to drive a nail without bashing your thumb with the hammer, you know, handyman Dan kind of stuff, and now one of the 50 best internet broadcasters in the country. So I'm just tickled spitless. Of course, if you see it, I posted that to my Facebook account, and a bunch of you saw it, but of course, if you go to the link, you'll notice they found a really good photo of me. If they'd asked, I would have given them an old driver's license photo or something. Because they found that photo of me as a Viking gone to seed. Long hair, beard. Yeah, that one. What did I get from my colleague Rick Smith? "Nice haircut, Bob." No, I'm tickled to pieces. A little bit of recognition goes a long way, and I'm happy as I could. It happened in March. How did we miss this? Sure would have been nice to get an email or something. I mean, we've got email contacts and stuff on the website. I mean, guys, shoot me a note. Wow. You know, just wow. So I did. That really did. That was an unlooked for. What's the Cajun term for it? That's a lanyap, right? Yeah, lanyap. Unlooked for gift or something like that. If I got my Cajun wrong, or probably, and it's probably pronounced Smith too. While we're at it, me, little old me. Who'd have thunk? I'm proud. And of course, you guys are the ones who have, in large part, made that happen, word of mouth, and telling people, "Hey, you got to listen. You got to listen. It's not like anything you've ever heard before," and as much or more than anything else, massive thanks go out to our friends Mike and Kathy Malloy for helping to spread the word about what the Horn is about and what's going on here, and wouldn't have happened without them either. And speaking of good news, and it wouldn't have happened without. We crossed the $5,000 mark, and I have begun the process of auditioning septic system installers. No, I think you flatted on the backhoe there, buddy. Next. Yeah, no. Don't give me any of that. Don't you clam on the backloader, buddy. But you did it. You did it, not we, you. And we are immensely and forever grateful in ways that go way past expression. Thank you. And the work has started, and the work will it'll be in. And we're going to get, and the monkey will be off our backs, and threats from Marty in the Bay Area. I hear you say, go Sox the next time the Sox play the Giants. I'll make certain you drop off that list. You guys are hard. You guys are harsh. But no, that's just a that's the good news that begins the program. And it is much good news, some better than others. And not going to the pokey is a big part of it, right? Or $100 a day fines. I can't handle those either. But we got over this hump, and it's because of you. And I am immensely grateful. We all are here. I don't know. Well, no, I'm not even. No, no, not going to do it. Thank you. It's 5 minutes past the hour. 6 minutes past the hour. You know, somehow or another, I got to get Bill Gates to where he can build a clock that'll keep up with a real one. But at any rate, it's 6 minutes past the hour, and of course, this is the beginning of the broadcast week, you know. And hey, I sincerely hope you tuned in to hear the inaugural edition of the People's Mixtape this past weekend. It premiered at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Saturday and was repeated numerously throughout the weekend. I think it even wrapped up before this show started. You got a chance to hear the musical selections of DJ Kid A. And hope you enjoyed it. Participate, email the show, that kind of stuff. Let him know what it is you're into. I think you'll like it. I think you will like it indeed. So tune. It's one of those every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time kind of things. So you know, be there, aloha. Okay. And as Reverbo is reminding me, yeah, don't forget, Bob. If you dig a big enough hole, somebody'll jump in it. Hopefully, not pushing me. But at any rate, it is the beginning of the broadcast week. That means it is Moran Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. That's right. Step right up. No charge, no cost. Behind this thin, 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 ever so thin shroud, this veil, this curtain, you will see or hear. This is, after all, radio. Some of the most ignorant, most stupid, most breathtakingly dumb things ever put forward by a right winger. You must enter now, because after 5 minutes, no one will be admitted. And you can't tell the morons without a program. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Celebrate. And you know what? It looks to me like our dear friend and Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, is suffering his own version of Moran Monday. I've spent the day calling phone numbers for septic installers and getting, either no answer or voicemail. I don't know how you run a business when you don't answer your phone, but I got enough answers that I've got a few people coming to audition, so that's a beautiful thing. Eugene, on the other hand, no, he wasn't doing that. Eugene says today, while I'm on hold waiting for a Comcast service representative to get on the line, I have time to translate War and Peace into Romulan. I think the Romulans would prefer Napoleon to win. I'm trying to ignore Comcast's Muzak selection, a continuous accordion rendition of Rhinestone Cowboy. Did you know that accordions only came to Mexico because of the Nazis? That's right. Glenn Beck said it. I believe it. That settles it. Eugene says, but admiring the corporation's subtle way of encouraging me to hang up. It's more tasteful and effective than waterboarding. In the meantime, let's scan the headlines, says Eugene. Sandra Bullock and Jesse James officially divorced. Sandra Bullock may be a bad sport. I have had illicit sexual affairs with every neo-Nazi stripper I know, and my wife doesn't mind at all. Pay attention to the wording there. Supreme Court extends gun rights to states and cities. It is only a matter of time before someone pulls a gun on Jeopardy. In hindsight, I wish that I could have threatened Alex and demanded that the Daily Double be in the British Monarchs category instead of roller derby champions. At the time, such conduct might have seemed psychopathic. Now, thanks to the Supreme Court's standard 5-4 decision, I simply would be exercising my patriotic rights. That's in the stack for this evening. Morans with guns in Chicago. Not that they aren't already there. And then this. Today, Elena Kagan was denounced for her vocabulary. After saying deferential in front of Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III, The Supreme Court nominee was attacked for flaunting her fancy, elitistic, liberal big words. An apologetic Kagan assured the senator that she only meant to say she'd be real polite to the Congress. The senator then condemned the nominee for saying assure. Senator Tom Coburn, who, by the way, whose cranium has been eaten by worms, was more concerned about Ms. Kagan's promises to be unbiased. What do you people have against bias? Real Americans don't have to worry about them. And finally, Senator Lindsey Graham only asked her if she would like to see a movie. It would be good for both of our reputations. Poor Eugene. But see, that's the kind of thing that goes through your mind when you're stuck on hold listening to the Rhinestone Cowboy on an accordion. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, David in Tennessee reminding me. That was Michael Savage with the Nazi accordion players in Mexico. See, it's getting to where I can't keep them straight without a program. but it is Moran Monday. And there is an element of sadness, politically speaking today. As you probably all well know, my senator, the senior serving senator in the United States, the senior senator also from the state of West, by God, Virginia, Robert C. Byrd, died today, went into the hospital seriously ill over the weekend, and, you know, the hospital's nowhere to go if you're sick, and died. And the entire state of West Virginia is all abuzz to figure out which sleazy way the governor of West Virginia will try to manipulate this situation to his own personal and political advantage. Because you know that he will. It's just a matter of how. But in terms of this is, after all, Moran Monday, and as we've defined it in the past, there are mean ones, mean Morans, funny Morans, organizational Morans, cultural Morans. Well, this is the mean rich Moran nomination for this evening. Steve Forbes. Steve Forbes, CEO. That's his Twitter name. Steve Forbes, CEO. I guess I got to change my Twitter name now. Bob Kincaid, one of America's 50 most important internet broadcasters. Man, that's going to be a pain in the butt. Nah, we'll just leave it at Bob Kincaid. They might kick me off the list otherwise. Steve Forbes reveled and celebrated the death of Robert C. Byrd. The tweet as follows. Good news. Financial reform bill may still fail because of loss of Byrd vote and second thoughts from Senator Brown. It is true. For those of you scoring at home and those of you playing alone, it is true that Senator Byrd's absence, it does imperil the financial reform vote. Still, that's a little bit, even so, is it really necessary for a sad, sick, sorry little wingnut like Steve Forbes to gloat like that? I mean, there's no decency left in America. Because at the same time that that Senator Byrd was ill, you might recall that Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney also entered the hospital. And while I was reminded of that old joke where the fellow goes down by the newsstand every day on his way to work, pays for a newspaper, picks up the newspaper, checks the front page, above the fold, below the fold, hands the newspaper back to the newsboy and moves on. Finally, the vendor says to him, "Mister, this has been going on for years. You always buy the paper, you pay for the paper, you read the front page, you hand it back, and go on. Why do you do that?" And the guy says, "I'm waiting to see if somebody's died." And the kid says, "Well, the obituaries are on page A21. The guy says, "No, kid. The guy I'm looking for is going to be on the front page." Well, that's kind of Cheney, isn't it? And yes, we all do things in our lives that we're not proud of, but some of us don't try to make A, a habit out of it, and B, boast about it. Cheney did both. So while at the age of 92 years, Senator Byrd went off to his long rest, in his heart gone to be with his beloved wife, Irma, who had preceded him in death, Dick Cheney yet lives. Ew. Just ew. And meanwhile, Steve Forbes celebrates for nothing more than sick partisan political purposes, celebrates the death of Robert C. Byrd. But that's not the end of the morons. We got all kinds of morons. We've got Defense Department morons. I have here in my possession right now on my screen the single greatest reason for severely cutting the Pentagon budget. And it is this. As long as the Pentagon has $47,000 with which to have painted a portrait of Donald Rumsfeld, they've got too much money. I mean, for God's sakes, it's a portrait of Donald Rumsfeld. It could have been done with a sharp stick and a little pile of bat dew. It's Donald Rumsfeld. And you, me, I, us, we, I don't care what minuscule portion of a penny is attributable to me, or you, or any of us, we paid $50,000 so that a portrait of Mr. Known Knowns, Unknown Knowns, Garden Knowns can be hanged in the Pentagon. I would be fine if Donald Rumsfeld was hanged in the Pentagon. You can hang Donald Rumsfeld anywhere you want to. Me, I'd prefer The Hague. I mean his portrait. But really, $50,000? Now, you know me. No one's a bigger supporter of the arts than I. But who's the guy or woman who painted this? Oh, wait. Keith Urban says that Rumsfeld paid for the cost of the portrait himself. Damn, I didn't know Social Security was paying so well. So it's they had a little reception this past Friday at the Pentagon for the unveiling of the portrait, featuring little sugar cookies shaped like snowflakes. Aw, isn't that sweet? Really, Donald Rumsfeld? You paid $50,000 for a portrait of yourself? I'm thinking there's other things out there that he could, you know, how about donating $50,000, Don, for the people you got, you know, wounded, maimed, butchered, and killed? There's an appropriate use for $50,000 of your own money. Marty noting, Cheney still plagues the living for one reason. Evil is a preservative. Remember how long Emperor Palpatine lived? Well, exactly. And who's to say Cheney doesn't have electricity shooting out of his fingertips either, for that matter? James writing in says, yeah, I like Byrd pretty good. He reminded me of my dad who died a long time ago. Maybe mountaintop removal will follow suit, though. You'd like to think so, but the fact of the matter is a pro-coal POS will be appointed in his stead. Here, let's get this over with, and let me explain how this is going to work. Yes, Joe Manchin could appoint himself if he wanted to, Joe Manchin being the governor of West Virginia. He won't do that. That's politically stupid. And Joe Manchin is not politically stupid. Joe Manchin is politically astute. He is Machiavellian in the extreme. So here's the way it'll shake out. The president of the Senate of West Virginia is a man by the name of Earl Ray Tomlin. If you're ever within 5 feet of him, you're gonna spend an hour in a needle, just a blistering hot needle shower, loofah in yourself trying to just get his aura off of you. That's how sleazy and slimy and icky and greasy Earl Ray Tomlin is. And having done that, what will happen is Earl Ray has designs on the governor's office. So let's just do a little political 101 real quick. And then we'll get on to the rest of the morons. Joe Manchin will appoint Senator Earl Ray Tomlin or someone similar who has designs on the governor's mansion to fill the unexpired term of Senator Byrd. Then, with the moniker Elect Senator Tomlin, Governor of West Virginia, he will run for Governor of West Virginia in 2012 because Governor Joe Manchin is term limited and can't run to replace himself for a third term. So that means Joe Manchin will then run for Byrd's seat in the Senate. There is reporting today via Ken Ward's Cole Tattoo blog that a spokesman for Senator Manchin says he isn't even thinking about that right now. And that's the truth. He's not thinking about it right now. They thought about this a long time ago. The machine is sitting there at idle, and the only thing that needs to be done is to flip the switch and go. And it will follow in order. So look for it to shake out that way. Wouldn't it be nice to run for governor of West Virginia as Senator somebody from the United States Senate? Sure it would. And by the way, in case you're wondering, West Virginia Senate President Earl Ray Tomlin is a total mountaintop removal pig. He's disgusting. I'm surprised his nose isn't permanently stained brown to the degree that he's had it, you know, there in the coal industries, you know. And then Joe Manchin will run for the empty seat. There's one joker in the deck, however. And the joker's name is Representative Shelley Moore Capito. Sorry. She's a repiglickin, and she represents the 2nd District of West Virginia in the Congress. Her daddy was the single most corrupt thing ever to sleaze, crawl, and creep into West Virginia politics. Arch Moore. She looks just like her daddy. She looks like Arch Moore in a bad wig. So the joker in the deck is, will Shelley Moore Capito, see how difficult it is? Will she be interested in that Senate seat as well, or would she rather pursue the governor's office? In short, would she rather go up against Joe Manchin or Joe Manchin's little toad? Because she's not done yet. Because her daddy was governor, and she has to at least be as good as her daddy, or better if she could get a Senate seat. So that's just a little quick... David in Tennessee says, didn't Arch Moore go to jail? Oh, yeah, he went to jail. He went to jail because he was taking little bags of money from the coal industry in exchange for his having wrecked the workers' compensation system in their favor, among other things. Yeah. A note coming in from Maura, my nomination for Maura in Monday. The Supreme Court rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. For gutting the gun control laws, the country is going to go back to the days of Tombstone and Wild West justice. And that's the way they like it. The Supreme Court ruling today that cities and states don't have the right to regulate or forbid gun ownership. Yeah, that's going to work out real well. And yeah, it was the usual suspects. It was 5-4 with the rats leading the way. Saying that, you know, kind of getting it half right and half wrong. This is one of those moments when you want to take those originalists and those strict constructionists out. Hey, dummy! Yo, pony, fat pony Scalia, come here. Where in the Constitution does it say semi-automatic assault rifle, huh? Where does it say that, fat pony, huh? but of course it doesn't, but they throw their philosophy out the window when it suits their political and ideological and cultural whim. And in this case, it suited them to, and here's the fun part, to extend, to say that the Second Amendment is applicable, because it's one of those Congress shall not sort of amendments, that the Second Amendment is applicable to the states via the 14th Amendment. Woo! Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Oh, we've got more ands, and I got a special more and for this evening. Ponder this. I will get to this hell or high water. Ponder this. Just this phrase. You know, the ACT test and the SAT test when you're in high school and stuff, they're all full of this stuff. Glenn Beck is to history as Ma and Pa Kettle are to mathematics. Glenn Beck is to history as Ma and Pa Kettle are to mathematics. Jot that down. Hang on to that, because I can prove it, and you might want a place to sit down and strap in, because you're not going to be a well person after it's done. Okay? Just saying. So, with that in mind, with the new week upon us, let us... Oh, by the way, did you guys check out Rick Smith's show live this time through? Noon? Noon Saturday, noon Sunday? The Rick Smith Show is live on the horn now. So you can call and actually talk to Rick and interact with him, and Rick is as sharp and good as they come. He's on the horn live now from central Pennsylvania, noon, Saturdays and Sundays. Of course, his reruns run as well, but if you ever wanted to call in the program, now you've got the opportunity. Different phone number. This is not the phone number. Different phone number. But listen, and he'll give it to you on Saturdays and Sundays at noon, the Rick Smith Show. Live from Pennsylvania. Well, enough shilly-shallying on my part. Let us go forthwith to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so, yeah, congrats on that list. That's hilarious. I love it.
you could have knocked me over with a feather.
It's interesting from that magazine. That's great. Well, how come they didn't send you no damn email?
I don't know. How come they didn't ask me for a better photo?
Well, I didn't see the photo, but your description, it sounds special.
Well, when you go to Talkers Magazine or you look up this thing or whatever, you'll see the photo. It's a well-worn one. It showed up on Bart Cop once upon a time because it's a crop job from me standing with Ray McGovern and I'm wearing my worst president ever T-shirt.
Oh, okay.
But I was long gone to seed. I mean, seriously, hair down to my shoulders, fuzzy mountain man, Jeremiah Johnson, Viking gone to seed beard. It's a beautiful moment.
Well, no, but that's interesting recognition. Fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm more glad to hear that, you know, you won't be going to jail. God, I couldn't imagine.
You know, staying out of the stir is a big thing for me.
Yeah, of course, you know, I'm not trivializing it. I'm really glad it worked out, but...
Oh, I know you're not. I know you're not.
No, and I'm more inclined to think that, you know, that aspect of your story, I mean, that's what... shocked me. I was like, oh no. You know, I know the problem with the house, yeah, that's the problem, but the fact that you were facing some sort of endless fine in jail, oh God. So I'm so happy that at least that's sort of manageable, right?
Yeah, it is. And now that we're auditioning folks to dig, you know, to dig the hole for someone to jump in, we're that much closer.
Yeah, so you don't want, yeah, you don't want to get ripped off by some contractor, boy.
Oh no. That's the thing. I'm kind of at a loss. I don't know how you audition a contractor.
Yeah, no. Listen, that's I wouldn't have any advice on that. But you got to be able to make sure you're not going to get fleeced, because that's a nightmare thought. But
yeah, because I don't want to do this twice. I'm really into not doing, you know, I'm one of those people that I'll try anything once and most things twice, three times if I like it. Not this. I want to do this once. And by do this once, Sandra, I mean do this once for the rest of my natural born existence.
Oh, yeah, well, no, but I'm inclined to think, just on the karma scale, the fact that, you know, you're able to do what you've done so far, I hesitate to think that it would, you know, take a turn this way. But one has to be careful at every stage, I know.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do.
No, that's great. It's all good. That's all good news. I'm glad, you know, nice way for our Monday's program to start out. But listen, so, I found this article. It was a California man gets prison for defective military bolt. Basically, he was an aircraft worker, and I guess whatever company he worked for sold, you know, all these bad bolts for helicopters. And I don't know if it caused any crashes, but, you know, it caused, you know, the Navy to do a worldwide alert. Now, he was sent for 2 years in prison, and he must pay $244,000 or so in restitution. Okay. And the other article I found was this poor man in prison who was screaming for 9 days, and he died because no one would help him. His spleen burst, and he died. That man was in jail for passing bad checks.
Dear God.
Okay, now this one, that man's dead, this one's going to prison. The first one is, okay, now that's, okay, corporate malfeasance, whatever you want to call it. Why aren't these sort of laws being applied to BP, the banks, you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and in fact, did you see that ruling the other day, Sandra, where God, what's the name of the law? It's a really bizarre, it's the best efforts at work law or something like that. The Supreme Court ruled on it.
Yeah, and they got that one black, that Conrad Black off. He's disgusting. Yeah, they have to redo his trial, and the Enrons.
Skilling. It affected both Conrad Black and Skilling.
No, I know.
They may get a walk out of it, Sandra.
Right. And I'm using these two to illustrate that, okay, well, just some lowly-ass worker who was working for the airlines, his ass is off to jail, bounced a few bad checks, and, you know, I'll be honest, I was like, yikes, I didn't realize the sentences were so stiff for that little activity, you know? Okay, because all I see every day, 24 hours a day, are these banks and all these other financial entities, nothing happens to them. And this man's going to go to jail and have to die because he passed a couple of bad checks?
Right. And in fact, let me just add to that a story of compelling horror, if I may, Sandra. Did you see the Oklahoma taser story?
Oh, no. I missed that. I usually try to keep up with, I mean, I wish there was an RSS feed for that bullshit. You know, it happens on the hour every hour.
I hope you're sitting down. I hope everybody is, because
okay.
Anybody who has not heard this yet is going to be fit to be tied. And so you may as well do the job on your own and save somebody the work.
Mm.
Police tasered an 86-year-old disabled grandma in her bed and stepped on her oxygen hose until she couldn't breathe after her grandson called 911 seeking medical assistance. She wasn't even charged with a crime.
Why did they do that?
We really don't know. Lonnie Tinsley claims that he called 911 after he went to check on his grandmother, whom he found in her bed, quote, connected to a portable oxygen concentrator with a long hose. She is in marginal health and takes several prescribed medications daily and was unable to tell him exactly when she had taken her meds. So Tinsley says, well, I called 911 to ask for an emergency medical technician to come to her apartment and evaluate her. So the cops bust through the door and taser her. This is Oklahoma, by the way.
Okay, but so has someone been arrested? I mean, are these cops being...
No, they're cops. Why would they be arrested?
Well, no, but they assaulted the woman, right? I mean, if she was just laying there, so I can't figure out what she did wrong yet.
Yeah, and the story gets grosser. As many as 10 El Reno, Oklahoma police officers pushed their way through the door. Grandma Lona Varner told them, get out of my apartment. And this is all part of a formal civil complaint filed in federal district court in Oklahoma. And the complaint says, instead, the apparent leader of the police, defendant Thomas Duran, instructed another policeman to taser her. He stated in his report that the 86-year-old plaintiff took a more aggressive posture in her bed and that he was fearful for his safety and the safety of others.
Okay, well, you know, yeah, this is like the, right. So they have a pretty good case, right? Is the woman still alive? Is she okay?
Apparently she is alive.
Oh, dear God. I mean, it does sound incredible, but because...
So wait. I'm sorry. It's a Ginsu commercial, Sandra. So her lovely parting gift was not a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. It was to be carted off to the local psychiatric ward for evaluation.
Okay, now, and all this is under their police powers.
Yes, yes.
But the son and the woman are now, they making a complaint? Are they suing? Or
yeah, what? That's this is from their lawsuit papers in Oklahoma.
Well, obviously they got a lawyer. I mean, wow, why do you need 10 pigs? And I'm sorry, why do you need 10 pigs for an 86-year-old? Was she black?
No photographs come forward.
Because they always seem to have a huge amount of people when it's like, you know, old black people. Remember that poor woman they shot up?
Yeah, in Georgia, right.
Yeah.
And because they burst through her door because the Supreme Court had declared that one need not knock anymore or announce it's the police.
Right, this old lady down there with a gun. That's what everyone else had.
In the project? You know, come on.
She had it in her lap, as I would expect anybody with sense to have who's old and alone. Shit. Now, don't get me started. That case makes me sick. This one sounds horrific. Oh, my God.
Here's the fun part, though, because, you know, as usual, as we are well aware, Sandra, these things don't happen in a vacuum. So this story, it's one of those that's kind of been on, you know, I didn't get to it. I got it.
Yeah.
Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent it to me last week, and I didn't get to it. And then this morning I get up and I see this headline, Supreme Court strikes down Chicago gun ban.
Which had 29 people shot up this past weekend, by the way.
Right. And the thing that sort of grabbed me was that the response of police, and you know, half of this is understandable. They say, you know, this is not going to be good for us.
Okay, but so now...
And so they're going to be extra paranoid now.
Right, so this law that they struck down is saying that, what, the cities and states, they have no jurisdiction to... regulate their...
They didn't go that far. They said there could... It's, you know, to the rats on the court, they said, well, you know, there could be some reasonable regulations, like you can't have more than 50 semi-automatic weapons.
Okay, maybe. No, but now it's semi-automatic can come back too, right?
Oh, yeah, because the thing is, Chicago's ban said no handguns.
Okay. But the semi-automatic weapons ban is federal, isn't it?
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore.
That lapsed a long time ago.
Right.
Under the Bush administration.
Right.
And then, besides the federal limits, the states were able to enact whatever.
Well, what happened, right? you remember when the Supreme Court handled the D.C. gun ban case?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean,
well, the reason that thing wasn't a blanket job was because D.C.'s laws are crafted by... The Congress.
The Congress. No, I'm about to say, I know why that folds. So they had to find a case, the quick smart, to give free rein to the rest of the cities, right?
Right.
And so that's what the Chicago case was. But you know what? Have you noticed that in Chicago they've had 40 or more people or 30 or more shot up every weekend, every damn weekend this year?
I think the official numbers are there. The damage done by gun violence in Chicago is equal to or greater than losses from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
Right, but this is with the ban, right?
Yeah, that's with it in place.
I don't mean to laugh because it's not funny, but it's just sort of stunning. So now what are the cities able to do? Nothing.
Whatever I think these cases serve notice to the cities, Sandra, that whatever they do, they will be sued.
Okay, so basically it's going to be spend a whole bunch of money to put a law in place and then have it challenged, and then you have to wait and see if 5 unelected son of a bitches are going to tell you what to do.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So these 5 people.
And why bother?
Are
you know, but really, if you're Chicago or any other major city in the U.S., why bother? You're going to spend a fortune on lawyers, and you're going to go to the Supreme Court, and you're going to lose to the rats.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, but I mean, there's something so dysfunctional about that situation because, wow, So the police, I mean, like you said, they can't be exactly thrilled about these.
Oh, they're a whole lot less than.
And it just means they're just going to lock and load even more. I mean, the people are going to be under even more pressure, especially the minority communities that aren't policed more than they're just contained. So that should be good times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's the situations where, you know, because we've already got a shattered infrastructure, most of the time, I mean, I know, for instance, West Virginia State Police, those guys go up and down the highways and so forth, and it's one guy in the cruiser. You know, the days of Ponch and John and those two white dudes in Adam 12, you know, domestic violence, see the lady, those are over. Those days are over. There's not two guys in the cruiser. And so one lonesome guy goes up to a closed door, man, he is going to be sweating blood.
Oh, no. I mean, all of it just sounds like some sort of nightmare. More gun violence. Good. Yeah, great. That's just what we need. Unbelievable.
You know, just another down payment on our little installment plan with the devil.
Oh, no, it's just hideous. But another question I have to ask you is, can you please tell me why the country of Canada spent almost $1 billion for the security for the G20?
Because they couldn't spend two?
No, it is so...
I'm sorry, that was a smart-ass answer, and I apologize.
Well, no, but it's just, I'm just sort of just completely almost traumatized by the idea that these little meetings with these pigs, if you have to use $1 billion to protect those people, don't that tell you something?
Whatever. I mean, okay, let's... Can we be 21st century people for a minute here, Sandra?
Mm.
Whatever happened to teleconferencing?
Yes!
I mean, do we really have to show up for the photo op where Barack Obama wears the lumberjack trousers and the red and black flannel shirt to prove he's been to a G8 meeting?
Well, I mean, it's interesting to look, because what it shows is the level of discontent among the world, because these freaks, you know, these elites going around the world to their conferences and their various confabs and just sort of on and on and on, are just sort of hated by the citizenry because they are effing us over. Now they're all agreeing to cut the deficit in half. How's that going to work out?
What they mean by that is they're going to cut us in half.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, I mean, just think about this whole little quick formula. Okay, the banks scream and cry because their fraudulent loans are all come due. The government bails them out, so they literally transfer their bad loans and debt onto the public tab. Now, with the banks all flushed and ready to go, they now want the citizens to lose their pensions, Social Security, all kinds of public services in the name of keeping bond vigilantes happy. And what do people do? Some people protest, but the Americans, we do nothing. We're sitting around waiting and saying, please finish destroying our contract. And these meetings they're having around the world, behind closed doors, deciding how to finish us off, from what I can tell.
Right, and see, the practical aspect of it is that, to the extent that the banks will be willing to lend out money, this drives the desperate people who've had their pensions wrecked, who've had their futures destroyed. It drives them into the less than tenderly merciful arms of those self-same banks.
Well, no, but the whole thing is just so sick because, I mean, after the Great Society was wiped out, you know, the whole safety net has been sort of privatized. That would be payday loans and the other sort of poor incorporated.
Right, and remember, the banks own those.
Right, but the thing is that all of a sudden, the austerity chant, it's just such a load of BS. I'm just sort of stunned that these countries are sort of going along with it because they don't read history. There's no way that dealing with the deficit with this sort of high unemployment will do anything but make the deflationary situation worse. Did you see Krugman's article today?
I was going to ask you if you had. Yes, I very definitely did. And
you can use the D word.
Yes, and actually compared it with the Long Depression and the Great Depression, 1873 and 1929.
The Great Panic. Yeah.
What we're seeing here, and I'm going rather far afield, and I think others have probably said the same. But we are fast approaching one of those perfect storm moments. When you take the Gulf and the BP disaster, and you couple that with activist, you know, real activist judges on the Supreme Court, you know, turning the guns loose, and then you consider this preferential treatment for the banksters, and the whole idea that we're going to make gain private versus public, you know, socializing the losses, which I think we all agree. You are literally setting up the whole blessed system for a shootout.
Well,
aren't you? I mean,
well, no. Yeah, I agree with you, but I also think another banking crisis is coming. See, this is what I think, and you know they're going to be demanding more money from the public trust again, and the way things are going, I'm inclined to think that, you know, the governments are going to cough up again because in spite of this, you know, that financial shit that just passed, that's a bunch of BS because if you notice, as soon as it was passed.
Well, not, but the thing is, it passed in both houses, but it has to be reconciled between the two bills.
Yeah, I understand that, and I know with the death of Byrd and.
It may not even happen now.
But the thing about it, though, when it did pass the Senate, all the banking stocks went up.
Yes, they did.
Well, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me the same thing that happened after the passage of the health insurance so-called reform. Health insurance stocks went up.
Right. Well, the thing about this whole
they know what marks are on the cards, and the rubes, us, don't.
Well, no, but the thing is, the derivative thing was completely hollowed out. I mean, the only derivatives they regulated were, like, for commodities and real, believe it or not, real items. You know, it's a joke. But the fancy-dancy, incomprehensible financial instruments, oh, no, that's still going as usual.
Yeah.
What's her face? She
Blanche.
She lost, okay? Her shit was...
But it was never there to. It wasn't there to win anyway. That was a political move for the kids back in Arkansas.
Well, you can think, you know, but the attack was from, you know, the left, so called too, because Frank, you know, he the one that scuttled that.
Yep.
I'll just say who it was. I'm done with it. They're all wedded to something really sinister that's not our friend. If I can be simplistic. They're not for us. But I do fear, and another thing I saw, you know, you see these little bits and things, you start trying to connect dots, and you're like freaking out, because I saw this release from Fannie Mae that they're now going to, if you walk away from your shit, they're going to kind of force you not to, you can't get a loan for 7 years.
Yeah, it's...
Okay, but, and the thing, the importance about that is, think of recourse, and non-recourse, Bob.
Yeah, and for those who may not know, there's recourse loans where the bank has a personal right to come after you versus a non-recourse where, you know, basically they pound sand.
Well, this undermines, it's the beginning of them undermining and closing off all avenues for us.
Well, but that began, Sandra, with the so-called bankruptcy reform of a few years ago. Remember that?
Yeah, that was a way of cutting off avenues for credit card debt. No. But, see, this all speaks to neo-feudalism. I swear, I don't know what else to call what's going on, because if you can't get out from under debt, that's debt peonage,
right, yes, sanctioned debt slavery.
Right, and I realize that, you know, I'm not trying to say any conspiracy, because like I said before, if you look like I do, You can see this shit. It's all brought to you courtesy of the damn internet, if you pay attention. And so I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, austerity, no way out of the debt, low wages. That's feudalism. And when I read What's-His-Face's article, you know, he's talking about, you know, the fact that the man brings up some history. I was like, no, he did not bring up 1873, because that was a wicked, wicked, wicked downturn.
And it went on and on and on and on. And right, and that's, and that should show us if we have any, if we have any sort of interest in history and its processes, Sandra, that should show us what happens when a government acts in laissez-faire fashion.
Well, that's what 1873 was.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and this is what's going on here because, like he said, we're getting austerity by default because the Congress isn't acting, so the states are going to have to slash and cut and lay off, and these poor people who aren't getting the UI, I mean the unemployment insurance, I'm still waiting for my prize to find out what the hell them people are supposed to do.
Go die.
Well, yeah, no, because I'm sitting here thinking, what in the world is going on? This isn't, you know, the fact that I have to search and be aware of all this different stuff. You know, because it, I don't know, Bob. It looks like it's coming. That debt.
And that's I'm kind of doubling back, but that's what I'm talking about. This perfect storm.
Mm.
What it is you have, and maybe this is just maybe I need a break. Maybe I need a vacation or something. But they ruined my beach, so I can't put my toes in the sand there and drink something out of a coconut shell with a little umbrella in the top or anything. But maybe I do. Maybe I need a break because some of this stuff is beginning to make sort of a beautiful mind sense to me because, A, you get the teabaggers out there. Well, and before you get the teabaggers, you remember the town hall meetings where they were bringing their sidearms to go see the black president and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so you've got these knuckle-walking mouth breathers all frothing at the mouth now about government overreaching, and yet, you know, not a word out of the teabaggers over the government overreaching in the Second Amendment case. No, that's just the way things are supposed to be, you know, that kind of thing. Or the government overreaching in the case of the honest labor law that's going to turn Skilling and the Conrad Black loose. No complaints there, but they are absolutely frothing at the mouth crazy over the things that they've been, the non-issues that they've been whipped up over. And you take that and you couple that with a horrible natural disaster and the right wing's willingness to exacerbate it all in the banking, with, you know, things like banking and perhaps a not only a prolonging of the recession and not getting out of it, but if Paul Krugman's right, an outright depression. And you've got the real possibility for a significant disruption in civil order, at which point the government really does crack down.
Well, because, you know, when I keep bringing up the million of people, 1.6 million people, I'm saying it because ain't nobody going to just go away and die. You know this. You see what I'm saying?
No, they'll...
You're not going to starve. You're not going to let your kids starve. So they're going to try to do something. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And this is my fear. I fear for them because the state might have something waiting for them. You see, I just don't see a good situation out of this. And I was also sort of reeling from that story on Malloy with the rain mixed in with the hurricane. You know, I mean, that whole image.
That was the first thing that occurred to me is, you know, early on I said, well, you know, what happens when a hurricane comes in and picks this stuff up and drops it inland?
Oh, God. I mean, just the whole, you know, that whole sort of scenario, I was just like, but in the meanwhile, you don't, you know, the White House, Congress, I mean, they're not doing anything.
They're fiddling while America burns.
No, and as Krugman said, you know, years, you know, any other time when you had that kind of high unemployment, people were damn near freaking out. And I think I mentioned this to you before. When you had high unemployment during the Reagan years, even that fool pulled out all stops. No one ever just let unemployment stay that high in this country. But now they're deciding that 10, 12, 20% is somehow livable?
Well, they've run out of tricks in their little bag, and because you know Reagan addressed it through, well, among other things, he monkeyed with the numbers. The first thing they did was change the numbers.
No, I realize that, but I'm just saying that this is the first time in modern times that an administration seems to be willing to just ride out.
Sandra, is it politics? Is that what it is? Because each side is trying to position itself to blame the other for some damn catastrophe?
I don't know, but it's sort of self-fulfilling. I thought it was interesting, though, that they're trying to sort of hold up money for U.S. aid to Afghanistan, whatever, $4 billion. Pelosi's pulled that out. And, people are making noise about the Afghan supplement because, you see, I think people are probably phoning up. I think they're probably getting desperate calls from these folks. I mean, wouldn't you, if you could, be trying to get in touch with these freaks who are keeping this extension from happening?
Yes.
And so,
But you know what? They're deaf to it.
I don't believe anything, though, about the military. I don't know what they're waiting for, but maybe in the dead of night, something. They'll always provide money for the endless wars.
Oh yeah, and unveiling of Donald Rumsfeld's little portrait there that cost $50,000.
Yeah, that made me feel sick when you were talking about that. I thought, oh dear Lord.
Yeah, at least you've got a couple of hours to work it off before dinner time.
No, it's just horrible. But anyway, just getting back to these people going, this man going to prison, I'm like, the laws are just so whack when individuals who commit sort of corporate malfeasance, a worker, he's off to jail, BP can hire DICOR, whoever they hire to guard the beaches that don't belong to them, and nothing's done. They can let workers not wear masks because they said so. Nothing's done. I mean, it's just out of control.
It is. And I wonder, and this is just because sometimes I try to do that, take a walk in my shoes kind of thing. If you're Barack Obama and you're sitting in the White House, what do you do? Is this inaction a function of his deferential nature toward all things corporate, all things Wall Street, all things that aren't Main Street? Is that what's going on here, or is he totally clueless and disengaged, or is he so stymied by the magnitude of it all that he's paralyzed by it?
Yeah, I really don't know, and I mean, I'm quite happy to acknowledge that it's just one man, so I'm not going to be lumping all this on him. I just think that these sort of forces that are at work, it's not going to get any better just letting it fester. That's all I'm saying. I mean, it's not pretending that it's not happening.
No, you have to do something.
Isn't going to make this go away. I mean, isn't it the case that week after week, more and more people come to the end of their benefits? I mean, I remember when I was on unemployment, you had X amounts, and then that was it, unless you're in a recession, then there's extensions available. So I'm assuming every week now you're going to have more and more people who have no more income.
And what happens when that becomes, not 1.6 million? What happens when it's 2,
million.
When it's 2.5? What happens when it's 3? Because at that point you're talking about 1% of the American population.
Well, right, but in the meanwhile we have to hear about people being lazy and all those sort of different memes. People are actually saying that, which is just stunning to me,
spoiled. Don't forget spoiled.
Right, but isn't it like every job you have 6 or more people? I mean, there aren't any jobs.
No. No, there aren't. And
what is the point of government if it's not to sort of hold up demand when it's gone from the private sector? Isn't that part of its job? Jesus.
That makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense to you and probably everyone listening to this program. But again, we come back to the fact that that's not where these disconnected people in Washington come from. That's not how their world works. That, you know, their paycheck comes in every week, every 2 weeks, right as rain, and all is good in their world.
No, exactly. No, you're right. I just, and that's why, I fear that the solution has to be, you know, from the people.
And if we start trying to create a solution that comes from the people, I'm back to the Chicago gun law thing again.
No, exactly. No, I'm about to agree with you on that, because I just don't see people starving. Not in this, you know, not in this country that is so stratified, where you can just turn your head and see somebody living large, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and see, this nightmare scenario works two ways. On the one hand, if the wingnuts get themselves whipped up enough to get some mob violence going and get people into the street, then yeah, the Obama administration will do something under the guise of national security, at which point the wingnuts will say, "See, we told you he was a Islamo-Nazi fascist commie." On the other hand, if they succeed in making him a one-term president, and you get some form of a Republican president in 2012 lined up with, enough. You remember how compliant, complacent, and how placating the Democrats were under Bush. Well, with that being the case, Sandra, what happens when the crackdown comes and it's a Republican president, and all of a sudden you and me, we're the problem? Because we'll go straight back to free speech zones and no T-shirts and all of those horrible excesses times a million.
Well, no, but if you get this sort of second bank crash between now and then, I fear you might get a Hindenburg type situation, you know, Petraeus perhaps in the role of Hindenburg, and you know, full on military style type of, maybe it's a Petraeus and Romney.
Ooh. You know,
he can resign his commission and say Obama did a, you know, blame it on him, and then he can run with Romney, and we have Hindenburg all over again, right?
Yeah, and not the Zeppelin, the man.
No, the man. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go there, but I just...
No, because I was... Oh, the humanity. That's applicable, too.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking about just that particular period, you know, how it was sort of democratic, and all of a sudden, the best people in town were your military people, because all the rest of them looked like bozos, right, which is the kind of formula we got here. And he rolled back to... All of a sudden,
yeah, anybody think Petraeus wouldn't do that in a minute?
Well, that's what I mean. I don't, you know, so I don't want that. You know, God knows I don't want some Republican, let alone some sort of military tinge to it, because that's some sort of Caesar shit, you know?
No, that's 7 days in May material, yeah.
End of the Republic, you know, it's kind of bad. But anyway, listen, I don't know. I'm so, like... freaked out by the lack of control over the banking system.
Well, but the thing is, Sandra, if it was just you and me sitting and the little Horn family all just sort of sitting here being kind of paranoid together and all of that, it would be one thing, and we're probably making more out of this than that. But it's Paul Krugman on the pages of the New York Times saying depression.
Yeah, no, I was like, I saw that today, I thought I'd be gone.
No, you don't read that word coming out of his mouth and go, wow, you know, I'm gonna go read Blondie now.
Well, no, and it, you know, it's him, but then on the other hand, you have, like, that freak Greenspan, you know, Easy Money Greenspan, now is talking about, oh, no, we gotta rein in our deficit. You know what? Here's another one that can, you know, hit it. I'm so sick of him.
They all, I remember, one of the folks I talked to at the America's Future Now conference telling me, they're money people. They always worry about deficits. When there isn't a deficit, they worry about deficits.
He didn't.
No. No, during the Bush era, deficits were okay. Yeah, sometimes you have to run deficits.
Oh, no, his only concern was, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was to the effect of, my job is to keep working people insecure. That's what he was worried about, and keep blowing up these bubbles, you know, one bubble after another. So, no, for him to come out now and talk about fiscal responsibility, I almost laughed out loud. I'm like, you know, you and Andrea, go the fuck away.
Don't you have a party to attend somewhere?
Boy, he's 86 years old. It's like, damn, you know, lifespan much. Let's go.
you just did what? Lifespan much?
Yes. Hey, listen, I have to, you know Sam Cedar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, he has this thing on YouTube where he has a 4-minute whatever.
Yeah, that's about. Bullshit, yeah.
Right, well, he ended one of them with Mars, bitches.
I saw that one.
And I thought about you because you said that's your new handle, because that is funny.
Yeah, Mars needs Republicans.
Damn, so yeah, that was, I just thought share that with you because I thought.
I love those little sort of cosmic meetings of the mind, you know.
Dave Chappelle, yeah, that's classic. That shit is classic. And for him to.
Oh, and by the way, I went and watched Dave Chappelle is George W. Bush.
Yeah.
I was not okay for a long time after that.
And I'm not a big Jamie Foxx fan, but my God, when he was Black Blair, come on, man.
That was beautiful.
That
was beautiful.
Was great. Yeah, see, that's classic because, like I said, he had Kofi Annan was the only person who was real because he really was black.
Yeah, he was a real person of color. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, and that's so silly. It really is silly, but it was damn funny.
But it was refreshing. It was refreshingly so. And you know what? You've created this nightmare world scenario here, Sandra, and I got a note in from David in Tennessee. He says, let's see here. Senator Toby Keith. And recordings of Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American subbed in for the national anthem. The Republican future that they all dream of.
Well, I swear all those neocons are just sitting around waiting. I mean, so this is why, you know, I'm sort of weary of the one term for Obama, but he ain't doing himself any favors right now, though.
No, I'm sorry to say it, but he's working real hard on being a one-termer.
But
maybe he hates the job.
Who knows? That's what I'm saying. I'm kind of like at this point with Obama, just looking at it, it's just a man. The issues are so huge. You know, I don't even have time to criticize anymore. I'm too freaked out by these big picture things that are just getting bigger and bigger, and there's no one addressing it because, you know, talk is cheap. But you and I'm not too sure, you know, how far we can go to stop it. I mean, it's horrible when you're able to see stuff and you don't have a way of doing anything about it.
It's terrifying.
It's really quite. It's quite.
Well, I mean, it's you know, the Greenspan stuff is pure Orwellianism. It's straight out of Animal Farm. All deficits are equal, but some deficits are more equal than other deficits.
It's a joke. Yes, and it's. And it's horrible because if you're aware of what he was before and you know what he's saying now, you're like, oh, no, bitch, you tripping, you know?
And but you know me. I'm Pollyanna. I've got my little gingham checked socks on or something here. And I'm thinking if that story was for real, Sandra, where Rahm Emanuel steps down in December to go spend more time with his family or what the hell ever. Maybe then we finally get to see the real Barack Obama.
Well, you.
But you know, there's gonna be somebody behind Rahm Emanuel who is the same or worse than.
Well, no, but we gotta keep hoping. Obviously, otherwise, you know, I wouldn't call you. I wouldn't listen to this. I wouldn't do anything. I would just sort of, you know, look for my little job and do what I, you know, that kind of bullshit. And just me and myself and I.
Well, I guess that, yeah, there's an element of that, there's an element of truth that for that, of that, to that, for me as well, Sandra. You know, I could very easily be across the room. Welcome to Walmart.
Listen, I can play that game, you know. It's like, I'm sure I could talk my way into some sort of job. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing is, and I don't mean to sound supercilious, I know what my luck is. I'm gonna get the Bob vomit cleanup on aisle 3. You know, and I'm just sit there mopping away like Joe Dirt. You know, no, No. And you know, the military thing, the military stuff that's going on, I got a shakedown call today because the Horn is listed as a business entity. And
okay.
I think I gave $10 to, you know, go shop with a cop or something like that once upon a time, you know, when I had it to do with. And so I get this shakedown call today. Good afternoon, I'm calling for Bob Kincaid. Oh, this is him. Good afternoon, sir. This is Brent and whatever his name was. And I'm with, and we're raising funds for soldiers for the West Virginia Air National Guard's 130th Airlift Wing. We need you to sponsor, a group of soldiers, sir. We need $250 so that we can buy phone call cards so our hardworking America protecting troops can stay in and do with their life. And you know what? I'm all for that. But I said, listen, I'm at a place in my world I can't, I'd love to, I can't. I can't do it. I just can't do it. You know what the guy does, Sandra? I'm not kidding. Well, sir, I understand that. We all remember where we were on 9/11.
I don't mean to laugh. Are you serious?
Yes. And I said, oh, stop it. That's just, no. That's that. I said, this phone call is bordering on harassment. And he said, well, even if you don't agree with the war, Mr. Kincaid, I said, you've crossed the line, buddy. I'm hanging up politely. I wish you a good day.
No, listen. I'm still stuck on what he was asking money for. It's like, why in the world are military personnel in want of any goddamn thing? I'm sorry.
I watched my fair share of episodes of MASH where radar dialed up the states and you came in and you talked to the little woman or whatever. I remember, you know, because we used to have a military that could do that kind of thing.
No, but can you imagine how hideous it is to be a member of the military now and everything beyond your nose is privatized and they expect you to cough up your money for it? I mean, it's stunning. I don't even have a handle on how bizarre that must be.
Agnes was just around the corner in the studio when I said, when he said, we all remember, I said, no, you did not just play the 9/11 card on me. And she came around the corner and said, who the F is that? And I you know, after I hung up with her, I said, I'm military retired and I'm good. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I had just heard.
But
your point, that's why you're smarter than I am. Your point is the better one. Why are the citizenry, taxpayers, having to shell out? I understand sending cookies from home and sending, you know, grandma's special brownie recipe or whatever.
Right.
I understand that. That's the comforts of home. That's a manifestation of love. But we can pay $450 a gallon for fuel in Afghanistan in a war that we don't need to be in, but we can't get them a phone call home? You know, and time out. Let me extend this for just a minute or so, and I'm not yelling at you. I'm sorry. Let me just extend this for a minute. Okay, let's say that the federal government can't provide that for the troops. Okay, all right, we're broke. Where are the telecoms? Why isn't AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile and that whole crew, why aren't there crate loads of activated phones and a wide open network? Why aren't they just airlifting them into Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and everything, you know, why are they paying whatever $40 a meal to KBR? I mean, why under this rubric of privatized is always better, but it's not. It's a joke, and they're calling just working people to guilt trip them into that. It's so ass backwards. I can't believe that.
Yeah, I didn't even have time to be mean to the dude.
Well, no, it's not a matter of that. I mean, it's not. It's
no,
not
I mean, like, God, I haven't had the hard sell dropped on me in a long time, and to have 9/11 hauled out at me.
Well, the 9/11 check, boy, that check just keep on getting cashed, huh?
Every day, and the well never seems to go dry.
No, it's just incredible.
And the backstory on this is, I said, you're a solicitor, right? I'm a volunteer, sir. I'm retired military. And I said, yeah, but you're soliciting me for funds right now. That's what you're calling for. Because early on I said, listen, I'm in the middle of my job. I'm busy. I don't have to. Why don't you have time for me, sir?
Oh, dear God. No. No way.
Wait. But the thing is, these operations are brought in there, and, you know, maybe 20%, maybe 50% on a, you know, if it's a really scrupulous outfit, maybe 50% of the money's raised actually go to the organization.
Well, yeah, no, there is that.
I mean, this guy's paycheck was on the line. He wasn't any more retired than I am. He was getting a check for that. So, you know, there you go. But, yeah, that's just, you know, one of those little slice of Bob's life moments.
No, that is really special. I mean, at least you didn't lose it. I mean, the 9/11, I would have been at that point like, oh, wait one damn minute.
No, that's why I started hanging up the phone the minute, because I just, you know, it was a couple of hours ago, and I really didn't want to do the show for one guy on the phone, because I was about to launch.
No, I'm sure, because that is beyond insulting, that whole exchange. Good night. Well, listen, I'll let you go. I'm sure you got other folks. So once again, I'm really glad to hear for both of those things, the good list and the septic.
Well, thank you, Sandra, because when I broke down and told that story, you were the first one to step up and say, hey, we got to take care of this, and that's huge.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm just glad that it's turning out to be better than not, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to eat prison cheese. I don't know if you've ever seen that stuff, but it's just nasty.
Oh, no. Hey, listen, my mother used to bring the government cheese.
No, that was good stuff. That was the good stuff.
I still see the box in my mind, you know?
Oh, yeah. Anyway. No. That was But that was the good stuff. The government butter, the government cheese. You know, there's an old joke we tell on each other here in West Virginia. Why can't you take a group picture of West Virginians? Because every time the photographer says cheese, we form a single line. but no, the stuff they use in the prisons, because that's where they make their profit margin. They use that stuff that's got no dairy in it. It's pure. It's made of all vegetable oil.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, yes.
If you go to your grocery store, it's the American cheese, pasteurized cheese food product spread. Not really. You know,
like
all that language underneath the word cheese.
Velveeta.
It's not Velveeta. I mean, no, Velveeta's the good stuff. Now, this is the stuff that goes for like 99 cents for 64 slices.
Okay, and it's just oil.
It's just vegetable oil with some yellow coloring. Cheese flavoring product powder or something in it.
Well, that's as bad as the drink. We used to just get drink. It was like colored drink.
Yeah, drink.
Right. Yeah, same aisle, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, take care.
Later, Sandra. Bye now. God, I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers government cheese. But that's the thing. That stuff was great. My father adored it. You know, and he was working class, and we couldn't get it anymore. And every now and then, you know, back channel, I brought home some government cheese, honey. Oh, we'll have macaroni and cheese tomorrow. Oh, I was hoping you'd say that. I got a feeling this would be a very, very interesting little Moran Monday. Let's go to the phones and see what's up. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Staff Sergeant.
Hey, Brian.
Okay, this is Air Force General Buck Turgeson here at
Burpleson.
And I want to tell you something there that I just feel the way you mistreated that poor man. Next thing you would have done, you would have brought up something logical, right? Like, why would the Air Force and the fighter just told to stand down for those somehow allowed for hours of September 11th attacks there, convenient for those war profits?
Yeah, see, Brian, I had to. Yeah, I did.
But you would have been a meanie person like that, too, if he hadn't hung up on you. But my Buck Turgis, and I got to tell you there, Bob, when we've been into Afghanistan, when we go wing to wing, wing tip to wing tip, with B-52 Stratofortress swinging in there, checkers to a barnyard, I got to tell you, it's like when Major Kong, when his plane was nearly shot down there, we had that little nuclear exchange there, and that Dr. Strangelove documentary covered it in 1964 there. So a few megatons gets released by both of the superpowers. So
yeah, I'm not saying we're not going to get our hair messed.
That's right, and it's fine. And it's got, and also, Uncle not the wonderful Uncle Buck like the comic actor.
No, it's not the John Candy Uncle Buck, not at all. No.
No, he's not a wonderful man. But seriously, about that, that's got one of the, I think I told you before that I won't strain your listeners too much about, but because I got other things to call about. But in Dr. Strangelove, you know, in Peter Sellers, he should have won 3 Academy Awards for his 3 masterful performances of those 3 characters that he played there in 1964 in Strangelove. But it has one of the greatest scenes there. What is it? The Soviet ambassador Kissoff or whatever his name is.
Yep.
He's wrestling with Dorchy Scott's Buck Turgeson character there. Cause
gentlemen, I have never seen such conduct. Fighting in the war room. Okay, Brian, you're good with the trivia. Quick, what were the Peter Sellers characters' names?
Okay. Oh my God, that's where you got me. Dr. Strangelove and I can't think of in general. Oh, General Mandrake. Group Captain Mandrake, and the other one, President Muttley or some Montville or I don't know the president character. I always forget that one.
The presidential character had a sexual sexual pun or a sexual double entendre. He was President Merkin Muffley.
Okay. Well,
look up Merkin.
In the same general, first of all, I wanted to open with rest in peace. I know what was the
Senator Byrd. Yes.
In his career, Senator Byrd, that now it's time, Bobby Kincaid, we got to get behind him, folks, to be the next U.S. Senator-elect from the great state of West Virginia. Bobby Kincaid, you got to do it. I'll back you up, Bob. We'll go as far as we can. It may be a city block. Maybe about it. But I think you're better qualified.
I'm thinking more like we don't even get out the door.
No, I don't want to hear that. And also, in the speaking, in the English language, they're Anglo-Saxon. My mother language, I talk about my Irish, Celtic, Scottish, non-white ancestry. But the English language, that's my parent and mother language there, the Anglo-Saxon. Especially to the Anglo-Saxon, to the old English, is the Dutch language there. And I got this from Babel Fish, but I remember some of these words there from when I was a student overseas there, back in the late 80s there in Holland and the Netherlands. And this was for the same wishes for Bobby Kincaid, for Senator Bobby Kincaid, un te zenja der Volgen U.S. Senator, Verkjest, van der Groot, Stelt, van West Virginia. Tervra den Evenings, Rustin Vede, Senator Robert Byrd. And that just stuff with that. I know you your eardrums have suffered enough there.
Dutch is just no good. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to get, and when Kevin calls back again, I wanted to get a few Korean phrases from him in there. I remember, like I said, I told you that story about teaching that young South Korean lad there, trying to teach him English while he tried to teach me Taekwondo. He was going at 20% speed, but he still nearly put me in the emergency ward there. Just to say hello and basic how are you, that kind of thing in Korean. How does it come out? I have the symbols here from the Babel Fish, but I don't. It might as well be, Mandarin Chinese looks easier to understand than this. For the people that still think that they hate the French, they think they're a bunch of sissies, I got to get that one in there too. Bobby Kincaid, pour être le prochain Estats Unis Senator elect du Grande Etat et la Virginia Occidental, s'il vous plaît, aussi bien, posez-vous dans le pas, le Senator Robert Byrd. Merci beaucoup.
I got a few words out of that one. My French is very rusty, but I can get a word here and there.
And there was a piece here. There's a lot that's coming out here. This Bobby Jindal is this blowhard in Louisiana. Doesn't want any government help there, yet he only sends a fraction of the needed National Guard down there for the, the BP, the ongoing mass death and destruction there. I think I emailed you the story about that poor bottlenose dolphin there that the vacationing lady found there, and some Coast Guard volunteers tried to help it. They died on the way to some marine animal rescue center or something. But the best piece today, I think, around the internet was by a guy named Saul Lindau at CommonDreams.org. Remember Vietistan, and he's already talking about, you know, this unwinnable war, really, with no real goals. The Taliban is fully removed from power. They're always going to remain in the hinterlands and have some influence. And this guy, Karzai, is never going to be he may have been an enemy. He didn't need to be in World War II. He was our ally. But in South Vietnam, we had no one that could match the charisma of Ho Chi Minh, the true nationalist leader of the Vietnamese people. He had a communist leader as well, but he was much more a nationalist. He loved the French language there. He thought the Americans as fellow anti-colonial peoples there, the way that we overthrew the British. And he loved America. That story of September 2nd, 1945, as the Viet Minh marched into Hanoi, American OSS people there, forerunners of America's CIA were standing behind him. There's 500,000 loyal Ho Chi Minh and Viet Minh supporters there in Hanoi. And the huge crowd in the speech there, Ho opens up the speech with "All men are created equal." They're bound.
Just about a deadlift from the Declaration of Independence. Exactly.
Yes, he did. And the fact, and then right then, about just a few minutes later, two P-51 American Mustangs flew over there. Because, you know, at that time, Ho Chi Minh was rescuing American pilots from the Japanese, having shot them down there in that part of Indochina and South China. And yet later on, when we could have avoided this war with him, the 1954 Geneva Accords and all that, they knew he had 80% of the vote. Even Eisenhower admitted that. And yet, at the same time, he was helping American pilots that were down in World War II. He was our ally. I think we could have had a free trade type of more open trade with Ho Chi Minh. He was not a hardline communist at all. He was not a nutcase like a Stalinist or a Maoist. And we could have had free trade relations and open relations with Vietnam by the early 70s if we had not done the Vietnam War, you know, after the French were beaten there in 1954. If we had not said, okay, get out of the way, monsieur, get out of the way, stupid, and said that to the South Vietnamese Army, too, and said, we'll handle this. But there's a great piece there, Remember Vietistan, by Saul Lindau. And we can't let the American people, the people are feigning the ignorance once again, that they don't remember the history of Vietnam, that it was based on lies. The Gulf of Tonkin history is all out there, all over the internet and the world press, and some of the American press even, that the lies that went on there, and I believe that there's massive amount of lies that go even further, of course, on the September 11th attacks, and they're trying to sell this war still in Afghanistan, our poor troops there. This guy, Mark Morford, too, wrote a great piece today, Bob, where he said this would have, or it might have been on Sunday, that this was Obama's moment, because one of the driving forces here for his escalation, for him to even escalate even more than he wanted to during the campaign in 2008, was the 64-page piece, recommendation policy by General McChrystal. And at the same time as he threw him out, he could have launched on. They've got to set the agenda and take control of the media. You got to do it not like an Adweek actor type of ad campaign. That's what Barack Obama's too much on the style. But you got to go with the core issues there. Be emotional about it. The way that Ronald Reagan could effectively, the way even that Bill Clinton could at times be effective about it for the people. He could force even Walmart to force. Into higher living wage rights, not unions, of course, but the living wage and minimum wage in the state of Arkansas. And yet he forced Sam Walton, while he was still alive, I believe that was, him and Hillary did, to get on board and support and be vocal about supporting raising the Arkansas state minimum wage as well as the national minimum wage there back in the 80s. And that's the kind of leader you got to be. It seems like the British Petroleum has kind of like a tributary state there, the way the Romans would have in different parts of the world there. That's what they have now in the Gulf of Mexico, Bob.
I think you can certainly make that argument with the one caveat. We must remember, in truth, Brian, it's not British Petroleum anymore. British Petroleum is a shell corporation that has absolutely no assets as a function of the monkey business, the corporate identity monkey business that BP went through some years back to stop being British Petroleum. But I understand completely what you're saying.
Yeah.
this. That cry for leadership, you know, it really is rising up, especially from our side. The other side, you know, the other side has an abundance of so-called leadership, but the problem with their idea of leadership, Brian, is that leadership to them is
hot air.
Right. Well, it is doing precisely nothing.
Yeah. It's like when sometimes in my worst gets there when Brian tries to do comedy or something or tries to impersonate John Candy or something like that. When let's just leave that to the masters. There's plenty of films and movies out about that great comic, great performer. But the fact is, Obama is too much of that. A performer, when he can be stronger on the policy and take charge and get angry. I saw him get angry at that Florida meeting. No, not Florida. Excuse me. A Baltimore meeting there with the conservatives in early February, I believe that was, of this year, where he called them out as being liars. He did it in a polite way, but he did it in the correct English way. None of this, as bad as he still is.
But it's hard not to ask the question, Brian, even after he got mad at him like that, given the structure of the media in this country, what good did it do him? They said he was an angry black man.
Some good with him, with his real, what is supposed to have been his base, going by the type of campaign he was trying to set, which progressives and independents and people that want a real change in government. And right now he should be seizing the moment to be forcing America and Detroit to mass produce electric cars and solar panels and to be built by Americans and used by Americans. And they're just laying to British Petroleum. He just admit that even Arnold Schwarzenegger, as much as he's, I think he's still part robot, and I've said sometimes that's the same thing about Barack Obama, but the fact is he says, and I think he means it, Governor Schwarzenegger, no more drilling off of California, and they want to keep, that's another beautiful coastline there. This country needs to get back to the real Democrats, the progressives. I just finished, the first time I saw it, Bob, was the documentary RFK Must Die. He was an Irish-American or an Irish filmmaker about the assassination June 5th in 1968 at the Ambassador Hotel there in Los Angeles and all that. And just that he spoke so much for the people and to the farmers in Indiana, to the poor in Appalachia, poor in Mississippi, poor in Watts, that this is what America needs to rebuild and not the you know, missile complexes and as drone missiles to kill off every suspected and many wedding parties and innocent Afghan peasants or Yemeni peasants, whatever. That this global empire is not. That's what Bobby Kennedy said, that we were much loved, much more loved probably when we were not an empire, when they knew about America's values. But we've got to get back to that. And they're always they could. Take them out again or something like that. The Sirhan that did that. I'm starting to believe in that documentary that it was CIA mind control over Sirhan, this lost soul there, this poor young man there. But I don't know. It just was a tragedy that the people that are for true change they have to be heard.
Well, the thing that extends forward into the present, Brian, because. We've seen the news reports that threats on Barack Obama's life have gone through the roof as compared to any other president.
It's a horrible black dis. I mean in the evil sense of the a dark dishonor against this nation that we've come to that level there. And
by the same token, the point I was going to make is that on the one hand you've got a George Bush. Where you can't even wear the wrong T-shirt to a rally paid for by the people of West Virginia, not the George Bush campaign.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, the Secret Service is more than content to let idiots carrying guns come to events where Barack Obama is speaking. Gee-many.
And twice not elected dictator run.
And don't think, well, and you know, by extension, don't think for a minute that wasn't in the heads of the rats on the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, with this ruling today, Brian. Because you know what? They would like for somebody to squeeze off a round at the president. I'm convinced of it.
And a lot of these right-wingers, you know, Glenn Beck, you know, he's talked about it. He's alluded to it, but especially, you know, would Jesus want to strangle Michael Moore there, you know, the great activist and filmmaker, and he's a true citizen. And you know, well, maybe he would. That smarmy, showy, vicious piece of most of the Buckeye boys I knew in the military and in college days, there's traveling around the country, Bob. From Ohio, they're nothing like Glenn Beck. They're solid, good people there. The real Midwesterners are like Toledo, Ohio lad there, the street kid there from Toledo named Father Michael Dennis Malloy. That's what I know he's an atheist, but he's going to heaven whether he wants to or not. That's what
they'll drag him in.
You have a good night, and best of luck to you, and your great career continues to expand there, Senator-elect Kincaid, Bobby.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much. You have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brian calling from New Hampshire. And let's see. Yeah, let's get in another phone call before the break. Oh, by the way, I asked earlier, why can't, you know, we've got all this technology that allows distance in meetings and get-togethers, and you can still do face-to-face with video, and we got Skype calling and all of that stuff. And yet they still need a face-to-face in-person meeting, the G8 does, that costs security in terms of, you know, upwards of $1 billion and more. And I asked, you know, why don't they teleconference? And then the answer was provided to me. And really, I'm surprised. David in Tennessee noting, Bob, it's hard to have an eight ball of coke and two hookers with a teleconference. And that's not just necessarily the world leaders that are there, you know, the staffs, the retinue. It's like the ancient descriptions of the king of kings, you know, Darius or Cyrus or Xerxes the Great or whomever, making his process away from the Persian royal capital at Susa to the Persian royal capital at Persepolis. There are so many, and you know, these are little, you know, they say that it's working and stuff, but don't think for a minute that there's not a lot of hard partying going on there as well. And that's what it's about. And that's what the $1 billion of insecurity are covering. The $1 billion of security covers keeping, you know, us from seeing them with, as the saying goes, their hair down. At least that's the way it makes sense to me. Yep, eight ball of coke and a couple of hookers. Yeah, high time was had by all. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Garrett?
One, we can't talk about a certain baseball team from Boston ever again on the show.
Well, and you know what? Marty will be more than happy with that because he was put off by my little Go Sox thing the other night, him being a Giants fan.
Well, I was too, because we're morons, because the team kind of...
Did we reawaken the curse?
Kind of, sort of, given that each game this weekend was punctuated by a Red Sox player getting injured.
Okay, no more Red Sox talk on the horn.
Yes. Yeah. Also, you're right about the G20. They could totally just teleconference it, and it would be better. But they don't, because it's all about drama, and I think that some of them certainly like the fact that the anarchists show up at that and, you know, cause trouble and all of the security issues. I mean, because they were arresting people that weren't even involved in the protest. They had nothing to do with it. They were just there.
Right, and got their lives turned upside down. I remember when they did this to the Australian people, and John Fox was close enough to Sydney then to feel the effects of a total clampdown on a city that, you know, these are cities. They're not made for clampdowns.
Yeah, remember back when, what was it? Was it the G20 or G8 or whichever one with Seattle a few back in the 90s?
Well, and that's the cause for all of this so-called security. They're afraid that some disaffected children with black ski masks on are going to turn over some mailboxes again.
Yeah, it's just it's a, you know, all it does is make the leaders of these countries. I mean, it's bad enough that when we all know that the environment is at a tipping point, especially with, oh yeah, that big, frickin' huge, you know, pool of oil that is the that used to be called the Gulf of Mexico. You know.
Yeah, we'll just change the name of that to the Gulf of BP now.
Might as well. I'm surprised.
Or now that it's wrecked, maybe the right-wingers in this country will want to turn it back over to the people it's named after. You know, Mexico.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Mexico hasn't made a big stink yet. I mean, because there's pretty significant...
Well, I'm surprised that during the Bush administration, they didn't rename it the Gulf of Freedom.
They didn't think of it. Now that it's out there in the ether, they'll probably do it next term.
God, I hope not. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past them, would you?
No, that's why he said that they'll probably do it next time they get control, because they're that wacky. And also, we've got to get more into Courtney Love. This is kind of for a friend, but apparently she not only did she make a fool out of herself at a concert she had in the D.C. area last night, but her excuse for being an hour late to the show, that she was with a senator friend.
Oh, dear.
That's what she mumbled. Yeah, that's what she mumbled.
Mumbled? Mumbled?
Oh, she was completely drunk. She had some toady recording.
Oh, so you mean slurred. Oh, the senator friend.
Yeah, she couldn't remember the titles or the lyrics or even the chords to songs.
Came out and said, "Hello, Cleveland." That, you know, that loaded.
Yeah, it was pretty epic. But yeah, there's that you know that that's just gonna feed rumors that, oh, Courtney Love is the one reason why Senator Byrd died. You know it. I mean, they make those the nutballs make the accusation about Kurt Cobain, so they're certainly gonna do it with her and Senator Byrd. The comments for the Washington Post blog that I saw.
Oh, golly, Ned, those things were that was just filthy.
Yeah.
About Senator Byrd. Yeah, every wing nut in America apparently commented on that story. Until they had to turn him off because it was just turning into a hate fest.
I mean, yes, the man was, you know, in his past a member of the KKK, you know, which is, there's not much walking away from that. But, I mean, he did do, I mean, not everybody is all bad.
This is one of those moments when I can get down with a Bible verse, you know, even though it really didn't appear in the first edition of the Book of Mark. That business about let him who is without sin cast the first stone. Because you see, when the right wingers start complaining about Senator Byrd and his former Klan membership and the fact that he was a Kleagle or whatever, they conveniently ignore the fact that some of their nearest and dearest busted their asses to work against civil rights. And you don't have to go back to the 1940s to find it. All you have to do is turn a very short glance back, say, at, look, the state of Arizona. Oh, them again. And how it responded to the idea of the King holiday.
Or Trent Lott. Excuse me.
Yep. Trent, yeah. Trent Good Hair Lott.
I'm surprised. I won't be surprised if...
Or Rape the Upstairs Maid Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
You know, because they like to compare the two. Robert Byrd was a member of the Klan for a period of time. Strom Thurmond raped and impregnated the upstairs maid. Those are not morally equivalent. Which one's worse?
Yeah,
you know, it's easy. Come on.
Ran for president on segregationists.
Yes, having raped the upstairs maid.
Yeah. Yeah, he you know, it's like...
Because you can't make the argument that was a consensual relationship because it was literally a master-servant relationship. There can be no consent in such a circumstance.
Of course not. I mean, you know, if you're put in that circumstance, stance by the person that's writing your paycheck, you're kind of, you know, and you don't have many options besides which, you're probably going to, you know, sit back and, you know, let the old perv do his business.
Yeah, and, you know, the beige, I'll mop the floor tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, this whole black, that's the biggest problem that we seem to have in this country, is that too many people think that everything is black and white. There's not all, yes, there are certain things that are pretty black and white. I mean, you know, to bring in Goodwin's Law, yes, Hitler's pretty black and white. But you know what? That's a pretty rare exception there. Just saying.
Understood.
Yeah, you know, there's just, you know, you know, everything, everybody has their good points and bad points. You have to dig for Mo.
Well, look, this is right, and I'm not going to sit here and catalog the long line of grievances that I had with Robert Byrd. I don't see the point.
Not the time.
You know, I said plenty about it when I did, and I caught some hell for it. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he was still trying to find a way around the mountaintop removal problem that addressed, you know, the needs of the coal industry as well. But the fact of the matter is, I do have to note that Senator Byrd, late in life, realized that West Virginia and Appalachia, Central Appalachia, are being devastated by mountaintop removal. And he did not shy away from saying as much. And for that, I am eternally grateful. And I'm thankful that he said what he did. You know, pointing out that, where is it here? I've got it. Here it is. To be part of any solution, one must first acknowledge a problem. To deny the mounting science of climate change and to stick our heads in the sand and say, deal me out, West Virginia would be much smarter to stay at the table. He also said, it is a reality that the practice of mountaintop removal mining has a diminishing constituency in Washington. It is not a widespread method of mining, with its use confined only to three states. Most members of Congress, like most Americans, oppose the practice, and we may not yet fully understand the effects of mountaintop removal mining on the health of our citizens. West Virginians may demonstrate anger toward the Environmental Protection Agency over mountaintop removal mining, but we risk the very probable consequence of shouting ourselves out of any productive dialogue with EPA and our adversaries in the Congress. You know, that's not a ringing damnation of MTR, but it's as close as any member of West Virginia's political delegation of any consequence has ever come.
Yeah,
and when somebody takes a step like that, you have to be prepared to praise them for it.
Well, yeah, especially since, I mean, really, there's a point. There are people that ultimately do have to make peace with both sides. There has to be that the people that are willing to do it. I mean, they obviously have to understand, you know, there's a point where you can't back down. But there are people that have to, you know, be diplomatic about certain things. What, you know, and that's to be praised. I mean, because.
But you're absolutely right in your assessment. You saw some of the same filth that I did. And it was just nasty, nasty, dirty business. But you know, why are we surprised? It's what we've come to. What would have surprised me more is if there had been any dignity whatsoever from the right wing.
Well, yeah. I mean, because the thing is that before I went out here to let my cat be all nice and happy with the 110-degree heat out here in Las Vegas, the fact is that in another chat room, one of the people, she went to a concert with a double bill of the Eagles and the Dixie Chicks over the weekend in St. Louis. Here's the thing. During Dirty Laundry, the Eagles had images of, like, Fox News and Elizabeth Hasselbeck play.
Oh, beautiful.
On the screen behind them. Yeah. It is just utterly, utterly perfect. It is
You know, in a way, that's almost too easy. How could you not?
Yeah, I mean, how could you not? It's just right in character, and it's almost, even though that song was written the year I was born, it's almost perfectly in sync with that culture now.
Yeah, easy there, Haas. I remember when that song was released. Hey, Garrett, good talking to you, my friend. We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, will do, Bob.
All right, see ya. Bye now.
See ya.
Garrett, calling from Las Vegas, and onward we go. Or not. Nope. Okay. You know what? I think I'm inclined to take the break a little bit early. Just to sort of do an in-game reset, if you will, because there's some stuff I want to get to. So we will do that. Because I got, you know, when I have an idea and it hits me, I just feel like a pole-axed mule over it. I can't hide my light under a bushel. And I got one of those coming up. By the way, but since it is Moran Monday, are you following the list, the witness list, of folks that are going to testify against Elena Kagan? And bear in mind, please, I'm finding it very, very difficult to say, ooh boy, we gotta get her confirmed. Especially in light of the fact of what we know about some of the cases she argued as Solicitor General, where she said, yep, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'll do the job. When the jobs being done were nasty, nasty, nasty. But Maura sent this in. And you know what? This ought to be a real, live, honest-to-goodness, three-ring circus. The GOP is calling, for starters, Tony Perkins. Norman? No, really, they're calling Tony Perkins legal expert, not. I mean, this guy was a failed insurance salesman at one point before he decided he cared about the little fetuses and what the gay people was doing when the lights went out. That Tony Perkins, this is a creep who bought phone lists from David Duke. Really? Well, he's going to be one of the GOP witnesses against Elena Kagan. Can't you just hear the line of questioning from Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions of Hood? Mr. Perkins, we all understand that you are a noted legal scholar on fetuses. Why do you suppose it is that Elena Kagan, who we ain't even sure has any girly parts, why you reckon it is she hates the little babies? I can't wait. I think Maura is probably waiting with bated breath too. But then because you know you can't have it's no fun to have crazy without a side order of crazy. You got to go for the real crazy blue plate special when you're a right winger in America. Because when Tony Perkins gets done. And this is too good. You might as well just stay strapped in for the rest of the program. When Tony Perkins gets done, they are going to bring to the stand to testify against Elena Kagan, General Stanley Boykin. You remember General, I'm sorry, not Stanley, General, see, I've still got the McChrystal thing going on. No, General William G. Jerry Boykin. And he's going to testify that Elena Kagan's policy of making it tough for the military to recruit at Harvard, she made it because they wouldn't recruit no homer sectionals, that was un-American and bad for Jeebus. Really? You remember Stanley Boykin? Stanley? Come on, Bob. You remember William Boykin, Jerry Boykin, right? This is the guy who went in uniform with all the, and I just love this phrase, Jim, so if you're listening, so I'm hanging on to it for a little while. He'd show up at, Rotary Club meetings and Fellowship of Christian Athletes and so forth, meetings, with all the fruit salad on his chest. And he'd tell them about how I was over there in the fight in Somalia. and that communist Bill Clinton didn't give us what we needed. But even though that communist Bill Clinton didn't give us what we needed when we was over in the Somalia, you know what? I knowed we was still going to whoop ass. And I knowed we was going to whoop ass because, as I told him, your God Allah is a demon. He's the devil. And I worship the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and all of his machine gun carrying disciples. And our God's bigger than your God, and we're going to whoop your devilish ass. You know what? And this may sound crazy to you. I want General Jerry Boykin and friend of the fetus Tony Perkins, I want them to have all the time in the world to testify, glory testify. Because if there's any reasonable, rational human being, and that's a big if, on the other side who happens to watch this thing, hopefully all doubts will be erased. Because you're going to see the full toxic flowering of right-wing hate in all its dadgum glory. But I say that with a caveat. Because there's new data out. It's a Vanity Fair 60 Minutes poll. And this Vanity Fair 60 Minutes poll, scientific poll, you know, not one of those internet click the box kind of, no. Real live, honest to goodness, using statistical mathematics and whatnot poll. This Vanity Fair 60 Minutes poll, this is worse than the one about New Jersey. Remember the one in New Jersey a few months back where 29% of New Jerseyans either were sure or not quite sure that Barack Hussein Obama was the Antichrist? Remember that one? Well, this one's a national poll. And, well, here's the punchline. It's not getting any better. So these people are not the people that I want to watch Tony Norman Bates Perkins testify, or General Jerry, my God is bigger than your God, Boykin. These aren't the people. Because, see, 24% of the people in the United States of America stand in a group, you know, wherever you are. Next time you're in a group, a good-sized crowd of people, you know, say 100 or so. Count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 24 out of that group of 100 people believe, and there's that toxic word again, believe, that Barack Obama was born outside the U.S. It breaks down as follows. Of all those surveyed, see, there's sub-story to this story. 24% of Americans believe Barack Obama was born outside the U.S., but that really, I guess that has to be the lead. But the one that just it gives me the dribbling runs. Of all the people surveyed, only 39% correctly answered to the question. The question, do you think Barack Obama was born in the United States, or do you think he was born in another country? See, they used think, wrong word, believe. Do you think Barack Obama was born in the United States, or do you think he was born in another country? Of everyone answering, only 39%, only 39% of respondents in this scientific, you can take the data to the bank survey, only 39% answered, he was born in Hawaii. 1% thought he was born in Kansas. 3% thought he was born somewhere else in the U.S. And 20% just weren't sure which state he came from. So that's 39, 40, 43. 63% of the American people said, ah, okay. He's born in America. But I still hate him. No, no, they didn't. And that's the thing. You can't break out what portion of those 63% still hate him. This isn't approval. This is just, where the hell was he born? 6% of those responding said he was born in Kenya. 2% said he was born in Indonesia. 5% said someplace else outside the U.S., you know, wherever it is that Satan lives when he's spawning the Antichrist. 11%, I don't know where the hell he was born, but I don't know, I know it weren't in no Merca. Math on the fly, this is always trouble with Bob. Kenya, 6 plus Indonesia, that's 8, 13, yeah, 24%, 24%. Guess who's going to be in the streets with their guns? Just saying. So a hearty welcome to the Moran Monday function of the Head On with Bob Kincaid. To those 24% of Americans who believe that Barack Obama was born outside the U.S., you done been nominated! Hoo-wee! Because you're a moron! Jiminy. And then there's the 20% that thought he was hatched. We really are. We're going to take a break now. We'll come back. And I got to share this with you. Little flash of lightning. Just got to share this with you. But, yeah, those are the dumb bastards that are going to be in the streets. Kind of spooky, isn't it? You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back.
Name. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Indeed, indeed. 8 minutes past the hour, and I just, it's Moran Monday. Like I said, this, you know, not that I'm particularly enamored of myself, but when I get a good idea, or not so much when I get a good idea, but when things present themselves, and I have one of those little eureka moments, and this is so suited to Moran Monday, I have to share it with you. I just got to. Because it is Moran Monday. And what we're talking about here is Glenn Beck. I know, don't talk about Glenn Beck, But when the light goes on and you see whence they come, you remember when we realized that libertarians in general and Rand Paul in particular were just nothing more than the human extension, or not even human, but just the refugees from Toontown that had gotten out into the real world. Remember that? This is one of those moments. Here's the easy, handy, dandy way to remember this. Glenn Beck is to history as Ma and Pa Kettle are to math. Glenn Beck is to history as Ma and Pa Kettle are to math. This will become clear. So here's a history lesson, and this is a great place for me to remind you. Starting on Tuesday, the 6th of July, the horn will be on remote for a solid week at Concord University down in Athens, West Virginia. And we will be broadcasting a series of lectures regarding the founding of the United States of America. This is real live, honest to God, no kidding, history based upon original sources. I think you will be captivated. I think you will be mesmerized by the discussions that you hear. Understand that right-wing radio could never get away with doing what we're doing here, because, you know, their listeners would just sit there and these puddles of drool would form under their chins. But you guys, you know, liberals, progressives, otherwise known as decent human beings, you're going to eat this stuff up. And it's going to, I believe that News Ninja Susan, who kindly does my show posts for me, I do believe that she will have the schedule up. I did send it to her. But it all starts at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, July the 6th. And you're going to be there for all of it. And if all the connections work out the way they hope, we hope they will, we will have a live stream going on the regular Horn stream, and we will have video going at the Horn's channel on Ustream. So hopefully you guys will check it out. You know, I don't mind doing video as long as it's not of my ugly mug. I got to get over that. But no, really. So be there, because one of the reasons I get so excited about that work that we're going to be doing is because of the fast, it's not even fast and loose, this is deliberately misleading. You know, Glenn Beck is supposedly a religious guy, he's got magic underwear or something. And he is supposed to be forbidden by religious stricture from bearing false witness. Well, he apparently spits on his religious teachings with every breath he takes. What you're about to hear is Glenn Beck explaining American history up to the Civil War and how we were very close to getting it right on race. No, really. Like I said, just stay strapped in for the rest of the program. This is going to make you scream. Come on, Glenn.
Tonight you will see that I'll show you clippings from the newspapers of the war heroes as they were buried with full honors from the Revolutionary War, where they were getting full benefits. I will show you. I held in my hand the statement on benefits from George Washington. It was the last thing he did as the general. And it was, these are our benefits for the troops. There was no delineation between white and black. It was white and black. It didn't matter. If you fought, there was nothing like that from our founders.
Okay, let's stop for a minute. The reason there was no delineation is because persons of color were deemed not to be human beings, and also deemed, you know, not really to be veterans, but let's continue.
When you see the newspaper clippings of African Americans who fought heroically and received full military honors and are buried at such and such, you see, I'm going to give you a peek.
Who happened to be dead? You know, you can honor them when they're dead. Only when they're alive that they're trouble. You know what I mean?
Of a sermon that was preached in the first real megachurch. It was a white and black megachurch. The preacher at one point wanted to separate and say, hey, let's just do a black church. The congregation of this church, both white and black, said, why? Why would we separate ourselves? The things that have happened in this country where it really started to go wrong was in the lead up to the Civil War.
Now, let's remember that wherever that first real megachurch was, I'm guessing probably Boston or New York, wherever that was, well, it wasn't down in these parts. Because one of my relatives was mounting the pulpit every day, every week. He rode circuit. And he rode all over this region from one church to the next. He literally could smell chicken frying from 50 miles away. He never worked an honest day in his life because he was a preacher, see. He just ate other people's food, took other people's money, and in return, he enabled and glossed over their hatreds, their prejudices, and their bigotries. Because my relative rode circuit and told people that the Bible said it was okay for light-skinned people to own dark-skinned people as property because that was the natural order of things in the Bible. But let's back up for just a minute here.
Treat ourselves. The things that have happened in this country where it really started to go wrong...
This is important.
...was in the lead-up to the Civil War. And it became politicized, and it was all about slavery. Before then, we were moving on the right track. You'll learn things tonight you've never, ever learned before, and ask yourself, why?
Yeah, because that whole three-fifths of a human being thing, let's not talk about that. That whole no right to vote thing, not going to talk about that either. How about chasing down... See, I've got a little more history with this than Glenn Beck does. Not just because I know more history, but because I've actually been around where it was lived. So it was made manifest to me. I've already told you about my relative, the preacher. Down in the town where I grew up, there once stood a hotel. And this hotel had a porter in it. And this hotel... porter, being of dark complexion, had an owner. And his owner picked up, or maybe he was sold, I don't remember. Or else he picked up and moved and went to Missouri. And that caused no end of trouble. Because he got to a point where he said, hey, I'm in a free state, I'm a free man. And it took the United States Supreme Court to look at Dred Scott and say, the hell you are! You were born a slave, you are a slave, you are going to die a slave. And long before there was ever a civil war or a run-up to a civil war, because you see, Glenn Beck, everything from July 4th, 1776... until the opening shot on Fort Sumter in South Carolina, that whole period, you godforsaken dumbass, is the run-up to the Civil War. The Civil War was birthed in the birth of this nation. Plain and simple. Jefferson wanted to include something about slavery in the Declaration of Independence, but he couldn't get Mr. Rutledge, or whatever his name was, of South Carolina, and the South Carolina and Georgia and North Carolina delegations to sign on without we won't be talking about that right now. You know, we don't talk about that among polite company. And so the run-up to the Civil War is the entire story of slavery in America. But Glenn Beck, no, what he wants to do is he wants to rewrite history and convince his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful with their little house helmets on and the little string of drool rolling down the corner of their mouth. He wants to convince them in the lead-up to his hustle on August the 28th of this year that conservatives have been the bastion of civil rights and we're taking it back. No, really. And so what you have here is a situation in which American history gets turned completely on its head and doesn't even mean what it means anymore. It is merely, it's like a sort of sociological Play-Doh or silly putty. Silly putty is the better analogy because those of you of a certain age remember silly putty. You'd get the Sunday funnies in and you'd flatten out a piece of silly putty and you'd put it over Dick Tracy's face and pick it up and you've got a reverse image, a reverse negative image of Dick Tracy, and then you can pull it and twist it and stretch it and suddenly it's not Dick Tracy anymore. It's something completely different. Well, that is what Glenn Beck is doing with American history. And remember the thesis to all of this. Glenn Beck is to American history what Ma and Pa Kettle were to mathematics. Now, you remember who Ma and Pa Kettle were, don't you? There was a series of Ma and Pa Kettle movies. Ma and Pa Kettle go to town. Ma and Pa Kettle come back home. Ma and Pa Kettle find uranium. Yeah, all of this stuff. Ma and Pa Kettle go to a French restaurant. And it was hillbilly comedy. It was comedy about hillbillies. Yeah, look at them hillbillies. And in fact, cinematically speaking, and probably sociologically speaking, there is a direct line that extends from Ma and Pa Kettle through the real McCoys up to the Clampets, and this is the heyday of it, up to and including the Andy Griffith Show, the Clampets, Green Acres, and then the downhill slide to the Dukes of Hazzard. But Ma and Pa Kettle started it in many ways. Because at one point in time, there was a hillbilly craze in America, a hillbilly fad, if you will, that had been begun in large part by virtue of the massive radio signal blowtorch emanating out of the studios of WSMAM in Nashville, Tennessee, in which the entire American continent got caught up in the craze for all things hillbilly. Because the music was pretty damn good. And it was unique. And everybody knew that hillbillies were stupid and barefoot. When in fact that was the entire antithesis of the entire culture. You know, hillbillies were and are some of the most resourceful people on the continent. And on a planetary basis, hill people are always just about the most resourceful people because they have to do the most with less. But these lighthearted little comedies were put out there, Ma and Pa Kettle being chief among them. And they used an old bit about mathematics. And this just dawned, because I laugh every time I see / hear this. This is funny, what Glenn Beck's doing isn't. But in many ways, they're the same damn thing.
I figure 75% to you, Pa and Ma. And 25% divided between the five of us. Yida, Crowbar, myself, Tom, and the baby. That makes 5% for each one of us.
Billy, you're cheating yourself. If there's 25% divided among the five of you, that's 14% apiece.
Oh, no, listen, Pa. I wouldn't cheat you. You know I wouldn't. Now, look.
Goes to the blackboard.
I'll show you. Let me rub this out here. And, no, 25... divided by 5 is 5. You see, 5 won't go into 2, will it? No. But 5 goes into 25 5 times, you see?
No, you're wrong, Billy. Now, I'm a pretty good mathematician. Now, 5 into 25, 5 won't go into 2, will it?
No.
But 5 goes into 5 once. Now, we didn't use the 2 before, so we bring it down here. Now, 5 into 20 goes 4 times. There you are. 5 into 25, 14.
No, look, Pa. Now, let me prove it to you now by modification. 5 times 5. 5 times 5 is 25.
Billy, I'm surprised you're learning.
Huh?
I'm surprised that you're learning. Now, I'll show you. 5 times 14 is 25. 5 times 4 is 20. 5 times 1 is 5. 25. That's it.
No, no. Look, Ma. Look, you're wrong there because I'll prove it to you. We'll put down 5 14s here. 14, 14, 14. There. Now, I'll prove it to you by addition that 5 14s is not 25. 4, 8. 12, 16, 20.
21, 22, 23, 24, 25. There you are. Better brush up, Billy. I don't want to see you boys cheating.
See what I mean? See what I mean? And it all works out on the blackboard. You and I both know that 5 times 5 is 25. But you can see it happening. Yeah, this is radio, and it's a little bit awkward this way. But you can see it happening on the blackboard. And by God, 5 times 14 is 25. And 25 divided by 5 is 14. And see, the problem with America and race had nothing to do with bigotry or prejudice, and God knows not liberalism. Liberalism was the cause. It was the conservatives. It was the conservatives who we were on the right track till we got to that Civil War thingy. Here, I've got a newspaper article from the Johnson City Battle Cry and Morning Glory of Freedom, and it says right here. But it's a con. It's a dodge. It's not real. It's a fraud. That's how it all works out. Because it never works out. It's not real. No matter what he shows, how many newspaper clippings, whatever. He's not dealing with reality. He's dealing with the manipulation of marginal facts to advance a political agenda for people who don't know better. Because this country has fallen into an abyss of God-forsaken ignorance. It really is that way. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. We'll come back, finish up the last half hour with your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877-4-HEAD-ON. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is the Horn.
First you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's carpet, it avoids an awful lot of mess. Because it's murder.
Bye.
That's just perfect, if I do say so myself. It is. It's exactly that. And you don't think for a minute that Glenn Beck doesn't know it. By the way, welcome back to the Horn. It's about 29 minutes before the hour. And let's go straight away back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Well, Ma and Pa Kettle always won out. I mean...
Yeah, they did.
People thought they were stupid, but they weren't at all.
And yeah, that was always the common theme. In fact, that scene that I ran there is, you know, those are con men.
Yeah, I heard about that before, and I never could figure it out.
Oh, it's beautiful to watch it happen. It's just it's such a delightful little dodge.
Yeah, and they really, they knew how to pull it off too.
Well, you know, I think it was a fairly well-known bit. I think there are places where you can see Abbott and Costello doing it.
Really?
And I think Tom Lehrer even did it.
Oh, I don't know him. Tom who?
Lehrer.
Not for me.
A little more recent than Ma and Pa Kettle.
Okay. I just want to say something about Rick Smith's show. He's got a wonderful show.
Oh, did you get to listen?
Yeah. I've heard him before, you know, and I didn't realize it wasn't a rerun, you know, but... Yeah, I just wanted to say he's really worthwhile.
He is a tremendous talent, and bless his heart, he's so daggum humble about it.
He seems like he's just the nicest person.
And he is, and he's a working guy behind the microphone, and that's the thing, you know, when he talked about working folks' issues and how it impacts working people, that kind of thing, it's for real because. You know, again, none of us are here pulling down that Rush Limbaugh walking around money.
Yeah, right. I saw Huckabee today on TV.
Oh, really?
Talking about he was on a show being interviewed, and he was talking about who he liked for president. Well, he started off with Sarah. He likes her. Likes that woman from... Nevada. Angle.
Sharon Angle. Yeah, she's nuts.
Then he had to say, oh, and he really liked Jeb Bush.
I see. You and me, we've been watching, Juanita.
Oh, yeah. I've been, yeah. And they asked him, said, do you think that he'll try to run this time? No, I don't think so, you know.
But I sure like him.
Yeah, but then he don't like Romney. He said Romney's got the answer for his law he passed, you know, about the medicine in Massachusetts. And he said, you could tell he just don't like him. I just, just thought, oh boy, they're really bringing out Bush a lot.
Yeah, I'm not the least convinced that that weird, psychotically, internally competitive little family does
Jebby, you'll never be the equal of your brother till you're president.
Because, right. You know, the Barbara and, Babs and Poppy are cranky and hateful enough that they'll stick that needle in repeatedly and use a rusty one once in a while just to make it hurt extra good for Jebby.
Well, if he ever gets to be vice president, whoever was president, I'd be watching my back all the time.
Wouldn't let him anywhere near me.
Uh-uh.
No, the thing is, one of two things is going to happen. Eventually, Jebby will run for president. Or he will put the clown suit on with the big floppy shoes and the red bulbous nose and climb the tower with a rifle, because that's the only choice. That's the only choice you get in that twisted family, Juanita.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking up different articles I have about him, and some of them I've lost, I guess, but found one. You know, he went to work in 2007 for Lehman Brothers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And also one of their cousins, Walker, one of the Walkers.
You know, I guess that family gave up on Marvin and Doro and Who's the other one?
I don't know.
Neil, yeah, Marvin,
Neil,
and Doro.
I don't know which one has the schools.
Neil does the school testing Dodge.
Yeah. Well, the schools down here, there's some schools down here that haven't got their test results back yet. And they don't know who they can keep on as teachers. They don't know if they need to hire more teachers. They don't know what to do because they're late. They keep saying it's coming, and it hasn't come yet. And we start, you know, the school will start down here in sometime in August now. I don't know what the deal is going on, but they're just at a loss of what to do. They, you know.
And, you know, what are they going to do?
I don't know. You know, they're still waiting. I heard today they're still waiting on it, and this has been a couple of weeks ago that I first heard about it, and I don't know how long it was before then. I guess when school got out, around the first part of June or last part of May.
And August will be half over in time to start school before we know it.
Yeah, and I know it. And they don't know that, you know, they don't know what to do.
But understand.
Math teachers?
Understand, please, Juanita, that lack of, you know, don't know what to do, that whole sort of uncertainty in the entire process, that is by design. They mean it to be that way, Juanita, because, among other things, you've got to remember that year after year after year, some member of the Republican Party, and frequently in their platform, I do believe, they will have a platform plank that calls for the dissolution of the United States Department of Education.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think, as a matter of fact, and pardon me for jumping in here on this, but... you may recall, what was it, last week when I ran the clip of Flush Flimball the making light of hungry children
and how they don't need
to eat at school?
Yeah, I called in about that.
Yes, you did, and you were as horrified by it as I was and many others were. All right, well, it just so happens that tomorrow evening we will have the flip side of that coin because there is there's a school lunch program or a school food program bill advancing through the Congress. And tomorrow evening on the program, Elizabeth Kucinich is going to be joining us.
Oh, really? She's going to be on tomorrow?
Yes. To talk specifically about what we need to do to properly attend to the nutritional needs of students.
Yeah.
See, on the one hand, we've got people like Elizabeth Kucinich and Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah.
And other decent, upstanding, progressive, liberal, good human beings who actually give a hoot about the well-being of children at school and recognize the exigent conditions under which many of them live.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you've got Rush Limbaugh who says, let them eat cake.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that snide, smarmy, sarcastic... I'll tell you, this will be big news for you. There is a thing called the refrigerator. Go to it.
Oh, yeah.
I hope some little demons down there in perdition hopping up and down on the bell is just waiting for him.
Well, I don't know. It may not happen in our lifetime, but it'll happen. If he wish he never was born, if I'm right. And my beliefs.
I think you are. I think you are.
I don't know. I pray about some of these people sometime, and I don't know if I'm praying something I shouldn't be praying, but I'm not praying. I don't want none of them to die. I don't want that. You know, they want Obama to die. But, no, I've never wanted that. And, but I want them to be found out, uncovered, you know.
Yeah, you want the poisonous tree to be shown for the fact that it bears poisonous fruit.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, you were also talking about the Board of Education. See, that's another thing, though. That's how Glenn Beck gets away with what he's doing. You know, people say, oh, listen to what he said. And because it's been going on for quite a while, I don't know how many, I say 10 or 20 years at least 10 years, that they're definitely dumbing down the kids. They're doing it like...
And again, they mean to, because they despise the idea. Well, for instance, if you listen to that hateful freak, Neil Bortz out of Atlanta.
He's the most disgusting.
And he never refers to public schools or schools. He calls them, when your children come home from their government schools, as if it was, and trying by extension to compare the idea of public education with some sort of imagined Soviet mind control.
Yeah. No, they get that mind control in some of these private schools, especially some of the so-called
sure they do.
Schools.
Yeah, the fundamentalist schools.
Do.
Yeah.
And I remember I wanted my son to be, when I was involved, in that concert, I wanted my son to be able to go to the school. And you know what? I talked to a minister, and he said, you know what? Now, this was godsend for me. But he didn't go along with the flow of the other people. He told me, he said, your son would be better off going to the public school because he'll learn to get along with different type of people, and he'll be more ready for real life. And you couldn't believe, and then you wouldn't believe who his son was or his nephew was. But anyway, it made me feel better because I felt bad that my son couldn't go. And I said, God, I'm so glad,
Well, we've got a little so-called Christian school not far from here, and if I really went at it hammer and tongs, Juanita, I could probably get them in on some sort of a scholarship because, frankly, the curriculum-wise, they at least teach Latin and Greek.
Uh-huh.
And I'm crazy and old-fashioned, and I think that that's important.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no way that I would want my children subjected to that kind of sick... right-wing evangelical mind control every day.
Basically, that's what it's for, is to teach them that doctrine. Pound it in, pound it in, pound it in.
Sure, bless his heart, poor old Bart Kopp remarks from time to time about the fact that he's still trying to get over his Catholic school upbringing.
Yeah. Well, I'm recovering whatever I'm recovering from, you're saying that you're recovering Southern Baptist. I'm recovering from a lot of the junk that I would fell for.
Oh, and I can't tell you the stuff I remember. My grandmother dearly loved to watch the PTL Club. She just thought that Jim and Tammy Faye was just the sweetest people.
Oh, yeah, I used to watch them, too.
And I'd sit there and watch with them. And there was a time, I kid you not, when I was deep into it.
Yeah.
And to have the light go on and the scales fall away from your eyes,
yeah,
it's a Helen Keller at the water pump moment.
I used to like them better because if you send in money, they'd always send you all these presents. They really did, and I liked them better. And they had
they put out a whale of
some good concepts.
They put out a whale of a King James Bible.
Yeah, I got one.
Annotated and complete concordance and all of that. And you want to see how many times donkey appears in the Bible? You go right back there and there it is in the 13th book of Kings, and yeah, there you go.
But I got stuff, and if you call them up, I didn't get such and such, they just send you another one. But, what got me off? I just always wondered about people like that, saying their money's running out and all that kind of stuff, and yet they still got money. And I think, I wonder what God thinks about that. Because to me, that's lying. But, anyway, I just, Jim Baker, is back on the air.
I had no idea.
Well,
I know Tammy's gone.
Yeah, she passed away. But anyway, you know, she remarried, and then he remarried after he got out of prison. And anyway, they started being on TV in Branson, Missouri?
Yes.
That's where he is now. And I was kind of watching it, and one day he says, if we don't get more money in, we're going to have to go off the air, you know. And I thought, where have I heard this before? You know, it was a constant thing.
And I think
I haven't watched him again since.
I think if anybody, Juanita, can understand why I really, really hate doing this by listener contribution.
Oh,
if
yeah,
anybody understands why I hate doing it, you do.
But that's totally different the way you are. I mean, it was a constant thing with them, if you remember. It was a constant thing, you know. Oh, if we don't have so-and-so, we're going to go off the air, you know. It was a constant thing. And, I liked a lot about them, you know. I didn't much like Pat Robertson, although I think he had me under his spell. But
Pat Robertson was not nearly as lovable as Jim and Tammy.
No,
and Lord knows, neither was Jerry Falwell.
Oh, no.
And that's why I think both of them enjoyed so thoroughly getting their hooks into them.
Well, yeah, and you know, Pat Robertson was really nasty to them. Even their children, their church, which was Assembly of God, rejected their children. You know, the Tammy's and James, Jim Baker. But he had a lot of good concepts about the way to live and all, but it just didn't work out. I guess it just wasn't supposed to be. You know, about he had like a concept of school where children would be, they'd be all ages, and they would be around the older people, you know, and they could learn from one another. And some of those things were really great ideas, I thought. But anyhow, it just wasn't meant to be. And but when I heard him say that, I said, no way. And then I accidentally the other day turned it on, and he was selling these packages, survival packages. It looked like a shopping place. And I thought, oh, my gosh.
Mm.
Wasn't that term in jail enough?
No, because you know what a dog always does, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Juanita, I gotta roll on because I want to try to get one last phone call in. But
okay, you take a care and not night.
All right, talk to you soon, Juanita.
Bye.
I had no idea that Jim was back on the air. Jim Baker, same hustle, different year. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Fancy, what's up?
Hey, I want you to know that I qualify as an elder, a poor, semi-indigent elder in Arizona, and once a month I take my card and I get the cheese.
The cheese still exists?
I get 2 pounds of cheese every month.
Bless my soul, we haven't seen it. They sent it all to Arizona.
It's good cheese.
Oh, it's wonderful cheese.
It's just amazing.
It makes the best. It makes the best baked macaroni and cheese that anybody ever had.
And I am a recipient of that largesse, so I just wanted you to know on that. Now, I also want to make a brief note. I understand that Marge died, and Marge was a lady who...
Yes, I am so glad you mentioned that. I heard about that myself.
And think of Marge for a moment.
Absolutely. Marge was a gem. I guess she started listening to Mike back in his Chicago days, and it was always a treat whenever Marge would get a chance to call into Mike's show. And I think every one of the truth seekers just sat there, you know, with their little elbows on the table and their chin in their hands, and just because everybody loved Marge. And yeah, she's
family here.
And she's gone, and the world is a lesser place for not having her in it.
Now, I had a kind of an interesting revelation this week, and I think that's the exact word you use. I was looking for the author of this book, and I can't find it, but interviewed on Freedom From Religion online show,
mm-hmm.
and I was picking it up some time ago, and he was a biblical language. He had been, I believe, an Assemblies of God pastor, and now he's an atheist, and he was writing about various things, and he explained something to me which I had missed entirely. And it was the process of, you know, how can you, God doesn't want you to kill, and here you are killing. And then you go back to the Bible that I grew up on, which is the Old Testament for you, you know, and God was saying, get them. Go in there and get, you know, don't just get the fighters, get the wives.
Kill them. Kill them all.
You know, get the goats. Just decimate.
Men, women, children, beasts of the field, things that crawl and creep upon their bellies. Oh, yeah.
Well, so this fellow explained it, and he says, what you rationalize in your own mind is, I am not a killer. I don't kill. But if God really needs somebody killed, I'm willing to do it for him. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, well, it's kind of like a 007 designation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when
license to kill.
Mind pocket, you know, I'm going, oh, yeah, there's the 00 license to kill designation.
Right, on the Universal Overlord Secret Service.
You got it. Before elections last time, and I had a neighbor going on about something and how bad Obama was, and I said, well, frankly, I don't think anybody who's running for office that I know of has killed anybody except John McCain. And there was this pause. John McCain killed somebody? And I said, well, he dropped bombs. I don't think it did the people under there any good.
No, we've seen the photo of the girl running down the right.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that 007 exemption that happened.
That is a beautiful analogy, Fancy. No kidding. That is gorgeous. I may like that better than my Ma and Pa Kettle versus Glenn Beck thing.
I want you to know I had a minor surgical procedure this morning. It went very nicely.
Good.
While I'm laying there in recovery thinking they're going to start real soon, I heard somebody say, we're finished now. And so, wow, but I'm not allowed to operate heavy machinery today. And I'm sitting here thinking the heaviest machinery I use is the toaster.
And you've won several of those on this program.
I've got several. Yeah, I've got a whole closet full of horn toasters. Now here's coming the really good one. And we're talking about killing babies or killing your kids. You know, if your child smarts off at you, you really, by God, God wants you to kill him and stone him at least. You know, get him down there. And the rationale, and there are people using this today, that an infant who dies is, of course, sinless and goes straight to heaven. So perhaps you're doing, you know, perhaps we're doing these little brown-skinned babies in these countries we can't pronounce a favor when we bomb their house, because here's this little baby that was saved from a life that no doubt would have offered sin, and yet here this sinless child, either in utero or crawling about the floor, gets to go straight to heaven. It's a direct path.
Exactly, and see, that's where their theology begins to fall to pieces, because...
Okay, now, here's the cool part. Isn't this a wonderful rationale for abortion?
Absolutely.
That, hey, we're going to save this little unborn thing the stress of having to go through the temptations of life.
Absolutely. And remember, what I was going to point out is, you know, these are not the theologies that believe in the transmigration of souls. They believe that, you know, one soul, one life, get out of here, go get your reward. You know, whereas, you know, the Hindus and the Buddhists or whatever, you know, that you recycle, 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 recycle.
More practical.
Right. But for the, you know, for these fundamentalists, lookie, you know, that baby's not, baby soul's not going to come back for a redo. That fetus is sinless. Let's all do that. And because everybody gets to go to Jesus that much easier, right?
You know, save your progeny by killing them early. Okay, well, and somebody in the chat room will probably find this dude's name. He teaches in Iowa, in a college, Hispanic name. And, oh, wow, I'm sitting here just listening to him go on about this and going, my goodness, isn't that interesting?
Well, I tell you what, if you want to hear some honest-to-goodness right-wing religious crazy.
No, but if I did.
Yeah, right. I heard some coming home from D.C. last trip, and I remembered to look them up when I got back here. Everything is they're like the John Birch Society of the End Times Fancy. And they are the Southwest Radio Church out of Bethany, Oklahoma. And I mean, you know, sold American crazy. So much so that they're a delight. They're an absolute delight.
I still, of course, I did not grow up Christian, but I did grow up in Texas. I have a very strange. I lived in Europe for a while, and what the Europeans don't, at least the Italians didn't understand, is that Americans are layered. We have layers of culture. That if you're an Italian American from Philadelphia, you have a certain thing that an Italian American from San Diego would find a different experience. And then my favorite one that I ever did is a black guy I worked with in the studio, and he came back from a festival one day, and he said, boy, he says, memories of my childhood, I just ate pierogies. And I said, you're Eastern European? He said, no, I'm from Pittsburgh. And so the way we lay on the culture, and it's the music of the church, and particularly the like Assemblies of God and some of those wonderful musics. I still love them.
Oh, yeah, you can. And, of course, when I hear Assemblies of God, I always think Jimmy Swaggart.
Oh, I
and then, and of course, you know, yeah, their music, you betcha, because got to remember,
I have directed.
Those are cousins.
I'm trying to remember the name. It's Sufjan, father and son evangelists. They turn up on.
No, I'm not familiar with them. I was just thinking in terms of Jerry Lee Lewis and Jimmy Swaggart being cousins.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you know who else was their cousin? Mickey Gilley.
Yep, I'd forgotten about Mickey Gilley.
All right.
Hey, Fancy, I have to run, dear. We are fresh out of program.
Okay, love to everybody.
All right, hope you get to feeling better, feeling okay.
No, really, amazingly, I feel great. But I'm going to stay away from the toaster for 24 hours.
Do that, and just remember that you're feeling great home the first day is different from feeling great home the second day.
Yeah, I'm pretty lined up for this, and it was and mainly the results were good, so I'm quite happy.
Good, because I'm glad you're on the uphill uphill side or on the high side of your results may vary.
Yeah. That was good. So hey, thanks and love, and we'll right if you get work. Yeah, think about that 007 exemption. That just really impressed me.
I am duly impressed. Take care, Fancy.
Bye bye now.
Bye now. Calling from Arizona. That's Fancy, and that's the program. Moran Monday is done. Thanks, everybody, for all you did, your conversation, your chat in the chat room, your emails, your comments later when you listen to the podcast. Thank you. Thank you to every one of you who helped make all of this little home renovation come through. Our gratitude is inexpressible. It truly is. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, who I believe is on vacation right now, Matt Osborne at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Cal, I'm one of the top 50 internet broadcasters in the country. Who'd have thunk it? Not me. I don't, you know, that I had no idea. I was sitting here quietly minding my business the other night when an email came rolling in from Jack in Shreveport saying, "Hey, Bob, did you know this?" And lo and behold, Talkers Magazine, which is like the industry magazine for talk radio, Talkers Magazine has named me one of the future 50, the 50 most influential, bestestest of all time. One of the 50 best internet broadcasters in the country. Not one of the 50 best liberals. There ain't that many of us. One of the 50 best, you know, wing nuts included, and, you know, how to drive a nail without bashing your thumb with the hammer, you know, handyman Dan kind of stuff, and not one of the 50 best internet broadcasters in the country. So I'm just tickled spitless. Of course, if you've seen it, I posted that to my Facebook account, and a bunch of you saw it, but... Of course, if you go to the link, you'll notice they found a really good photo of me. If they'd asked, I would have given them an old driver's license photo or something. Because they found that photo of me as a Viking gone to seed. Long hair, beard. Yeah, that one. What did I get from my colleague Rick Smith? "Nice haircut, Bob." No, I'm tickled to pieces. A little bit of recognition goes a long way, and I'm happy as I could. It happened in March. How did we miss this? Sure would have been nice to get an email or something. I mean, we've got email contacts and stuff on the website. I mean, guys, shoot me a note. Wow. So I did really did. That was an unlooked for. And what's the Cajun term for it? That's a lanyap. Right? Yeah, lanyap. Unlooked for gift or something like that, if I got my Cajun wrong, or probably. And it's probably pronounced Smith, too, while we're at it. Me, little old me. Who'd have thunk? I'm proud. And, of course, you guys are the ones who have, in large part, made that happen, word of mouth, and telling people, hey, you gotta listen. It's not like anything you've ever heard before. And as much or more than anything else, massive thanks go out to our friends Mike and Kathy Malloy for helping to spread the word about what the Horn is about and what's going on here. And wouldn't have happened without them either. And speaking of good news, and it wouldn't have happened without, we crossed the $5,000 mark. And I have begun the process of auditioning septic system installers. No, I think you flatted on the backhoe there, buddy. Next. Yeah, no. Don't give me any of that. Don't you clam on the backloader, buddy. but you did it. Not we, you. And we are immensely and forever grateful, in ways that go way past expression. Thank you. And the work has started, and the work it'll be in. And we're going to get, and the monkey will be off our backs, and...
threats from Marty in the Bay Area. I hear you say, go Sox the next time the Sox play the Giants. I'll make certain you drop off that list. You guys are hard. You guys are harsh. But no, that's just a that's the good news that begins the program. And it is much good news, some better than others. And not going to the pokey is a big part of it, right? Or $100 a day fines. I can't handle those either. But we got over this hump, and it's because of you. And I am immensely grateful. We all are here. I don't know. Well, no, I'm not even. No, no, not going to do it. Thank you. It's 5 minutes past the hour. 6 minutes past the hour. Yeah, somehow or another, I got to get Bill Gates to where he can build a clock that'll keep up with a real one. But at any rate, it's 6 minutes past the hour, and of course, this is the beginning of the broadcast week, you know. And hey, I sincerely hope you tuned in to hear the inaugural edition of the People's Mixtape this past weekend. It premiered at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Saturday and was repeated numerous times.